Headstrong, I support this draft.
Ben Louder, at large. Carl Porter, supports the draft.
Dan Potts, non-consumptive.
Ron Camp, supports the draft.
Chris Marble, at large.
Larry Fitzgerald, agricultural.
Matt Clark, supports the draft.
George Garcia, Forest Service.
Chris Smith, non-consumptive.
Okay, I'm Richard Hanson, I'm the chair of the board. Mr. Burden, our regional director. Appreciate you being here. We appreciate all the division personnel being here. The meeting will go as follows. After the division will make a presentation. And after that presentation, we'll bring it to the board. Any questions they have on the presentation, they can be made at that time. Then any questions that the public has, they can present them at that time on the proposal. That's questions only. Just come up to one of the mics, either mic, to make that, to pose your question. Then there will be a period that the public then can comment on the proposal, and then that it will be brought back to the board for that for their comments and discussions at that point, and then ultimately a vote. You'll have 3 minutes as an individual to present your proposal or question. And if you are representing a group, we'll give you 5 minutes to do that also. We'd like to start off, first of all, then, we need to have an approval of the agenda. Bring that to the board. Ken, make a motion to approve the agenda for tonight. Carl, on the second. All in favor? Votes unanimous. Have all of you had a chance to kind of look over events last time? Any discrepancies, any problems? They will entertain a motion to approve those minutes. Chris?
I'll second.
Ron, second. All in favor? Okay. Any opposed? Okay, won't you know? Okay. I have a section on here for old business, and I'm not sure that we have any old business we want to take up at this point. Does any of the group have anything that they'd like to bring up at this point? Okay, no, I'll move on. We'll have a regional update, and Jason will inform us about that.
All right, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief on the update tonight so we can get into business. Just a few things in wildlife section, of course, the deer hunting ended a couple weeks ago. And from our check stations, we're starting to compile some of the data that they collected there. Overall, it seems like it was a pretty good deer hunt. Data showing that there's more mature bucks were taken this year than the previous years, at least in those check stations that we checked. Additionally, a lot of deer coming in those check stations were in really good health and will be going into winter very healthy. Pheasant hunt, of course, began last Saturday and runs through the 20th of this month. As we have done in the past, we'll be releasing pheasants throughout the state on different WMAs and different properties. And I invite the RAF to contact any biologists if you'd like to go out with them and release the pheasants. We do have on our division webpage, I guess it'd be the pheasant release area map. So it's a map that's updated where we're going to be releasing the pheasants, so you can go look at the map and see exactly what properties they're going to be released on, so you can find their hunts that way. With the hunt over, our biologists are going to be focusing on the deer classifications now. That'll run now through the first or sometime in December, or a little earlier than that. And again, as with the pheasants, we invite our rack members to get with our biologists and collect them for a ride along and work with them on those classifications. You're welcome to do that as well. Our habitat section, of course, is our busy time implementing our projects on the ground, getting seed on the ground, getting cover, and getting our projects done. As I've mentioned in the past racks, we've got a lot of wildfires here in the central region that our biologists are working on. Many of those have been seeded and are working on getting that seed back into the ground with either chaining or drills. They're also finishing up on kind of the plant restoration projects. I know a couple of those involve guzzlers. I think they just placed a guzzler up here right above us earlier this week, and quite a few out on Lake Mountain out there as well. So a lot of habitat work going on, habitat improvement projects. There are aquatics. Our aquatics groups reached out and created a Yuma Reservoir Working Group. And they'll be meeting on November 30th up in Salt Lake at the DNR building up there. And the primary topics of discussion will be the management plan update, some reservoir operation information will be shared, and then they'll be looking at what type or what future work could or should be done on the reservoir to improve that fishery there. Final road home treatment for Mill Creek was completed in early September, and on the 15th of November, they'll be stocking about 9,000 vonville cutthroat trout in the lower end of that river where they've taken out all the other fish. There'll be about 2 to 3 inch fish stocked in there. That'll kind of complete the project for the Mill Creek project. Just a kind of an update on Strawberry Reservoir. Throughout this year, they've stocked about 1.7 million fish in the reservoir. In the spring, they put in almost a million cutthroats. About 650,000 cutthroats in the spring, and another 300,000 this fall. 400,000 kokanee in this fall, and another 350,000 rainbows this fall as well. So they're putting a lot of fish in there and restoring that fishery. Quite a bit of opportunity in that fishery. In our big section, I think most of you probably knew Tawny Kiefer. She moved up to the northeastern region to the Bernal office there. We've filled her position. The wildlife recreation specialist position, and we filled that with Shantae Lunscombe. And she'll be mostly focusing her time on community fish ponds, walking access, and some of the local wildlife within the region. We're excited to have her on. She's spent some time up at Strawberry Reservoir, and she'll be a great addition to our outreach section. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I think I'll end and turn the time back over to you.
I'll quickly go over some of the actions that were taken at the one last wildlife board meeting. And John there, who is he can correct me if I'm wrong. Right. Okay. Fishing guidebook of rule, there was a lot of discussion about that. Different things. There was a lot of discussion about the Schofield and some of the folks up there are very happy with that. The division, I know, is working on a plan for that, trying to bring that back. When it was all said and done, there was a motion to second, and it was passed unanimously. And they also had a motion and a second to have a 2-day possession limit on strawberry, but that Old Neutron Lake tributaries and open it for all fish except walleye. That won't pass that 4-1. On Schofield, there was a motion to second to accept the, not Schofield, but the motion made and seconded, passed unanimously to accept the balance of the recommendations on the presentation. Then there was a, just an information portion concerning once in a lifetime archery hunt strategy, and there was actually presented by Ben Mountain, member of our and that was a once in a lifetime archery proposal, and there might be some discussion about that tonight. Then on the Lake Powell Management Plan, that was, there was a motion and a second on that, and both of them, there was a unanimous vote and that passed as presented. Then on the Conservation Permit Program, there was some discussion on that, talked to gave some of the amounts that were raised in the conservation program in 2016, it was $3.9 million raised in the conservation permit program, the auction. gave a breakdown of some of the projects, how much had been spent on them, and the additional projects that were committed for 2017. That was a motion. There was a motion and a second, and it was unanimous to accept the as presented. Then, on the central reaching recommendations concerning the Sunset Shrimp Farm and Mere Shrimp Farms, that was, there was a motion made and seconded, and the vote was unanimous as presented. Then on the conservation permit audit, after that was presented, there was a motion to accept that, and there was a motion also to look at the interest on the funds and how and who gets that. Then after that, there was some additional action items that really involved only the Wildlife Board. So that's pretty much it concerning the Wildlife Board. So at this point, we'll go ahead and have Justin.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Can I make a correction on the...
Yes.
The streams being opened into Utah Lake, they were already open with the exception of the 3 months that they were closed to all fishing. Those 3 months, they were open to everything with the exception of all walleye must be returned.
Okay.
So it's just those 3 months that walleye need to be returned, not year round.
Okay, thanks for the clarification. Okay, Justin? You know, Justin does a pretty good job for being raised on a big rock with a great strong leg.
Thank you.
Good job.
Tonight I'm going to present the LP management plans for the state of Utah.
And to begin, the state right elk management plan was approved by the Wildlife Board just this last December. And unit plans were revised this summer. Local advisory committees were formed on units that were either chronically over objective, a change in the population objective was being considered, or had great amounts of social conflict. Now, these advisory committees, they were diverse, and they had representation from sportsmen, landowners, livestock producers, federal agencies, and other stakeholders. So the unit plans, they fall under the umbrella of the statewide management goals, which are to improve management of Utah's elk populations, conserve and improve elk habitat throughout the state, and enhance recreation opportunities for hunting and viewing elk. The unit plans, they must stay within the sideboards of the statewide plan, and they're being proposed in a 7-year plan. The purpose of unit plans is to define management goals, objectives, and strategies, outline unit boundaries, and address issues and concerns of elk and their habitats. So we'll start with population objectives. The statewide population objective is simply the sum of the objectives contained in unit plan. And factors that influence those population objectives include things like depredation, winter mange, social and biological factors, range improvement, range health, those types of things. So I figured the best way to present the population data would simply be by region. And so with the unit plans that are being proposed tonight, we're proposing increases on the Ogden, Morgan Southridge, East Canyon, and Chalk Creek units there. So from Ogden, we're recommending an increase of 1,200 elk, 300 elk on the Morgan Southridge, 800 on the East Canyon, and 800 on the Chalk Creek. Here we just have some graphs that kind of show what the populations have been doing over the last 10 years. The red line on the bottom is the Ogden unit. The blue line is the Chalk Creek unit, and there in red and blue, the dotted lines are the population objectives. And so as you can see, about 2010, 2011, we got a pretty good spike of elk in the Chalk Creek unit. And we got pretty aggressive with things like antler self-control permits and some of those things, and dipped that down, and it's kind of been stable ever since. And similar story with the Ogden. Got a pretty good increase of elk in about 2013 on that unit. We've been trying to get after that with some aggressive permits and get that population stabilized. For the rest of the northern region, similar data, 2009, 2010, some increases. Got the antlers elk permits figured out with the right harvest success rates and the right amount of permits. And we've seen declining dips both in the East Canyon, Morgan, Southridge units. For the northeast region, I recommend three increases. The first is on the North Slope Three Corners, increase of 200 elk and the population objective. On the Current Creek, recommend an increase from 1,200 to 3,200 on that unit, and then Wasatch Mountains and Minnequin, recommend an increase of 200 elk from 1,600 to 1,800. The blue line there is the North Slope Three Corners unit, and as you can see, declining trend, and it's there right around the population objective. A little below it this last year. The Minnequin, it's kind of always been there, right over that objective, really close. And on the Current Creek, if you'll remember, that population just really, really high counts on that survey in 2012. And as we've gotten really aggressive with that population, taking that down 1,500 elk in the last 3 years, it hasn't really been popular with sportsmen. I'm sure none of you have ever heard complaints on the Wasatch. But that graph kind of shows what those complaints are centered around. We have an objective at 1,200, getting really aggressive trying to reach that objective, and in so doing, we've heard the frustrations from the sportsmen. Southeast region, recommend an increase of 200 permits on the 9-mile Range Creek from 1,600 to 1,800. This population 10 years ago was quite a bit higher than the objective. The objective was 1,000 for a while, and it got increased to 1,600. And we're able to get some harvest and figure out how to get hunters on top of those elk and get the harvest we need, and it's been declining over the last 7-8 years or so. And then for the central region, recommend two increases. The first is on the Wasatch Mountains West from 2,600 to 3,400 elk. And the next unit is the Upper Stansbury, from 900 up to 1,650. If you look at where both of these units have been over the last 10 years, Oker Stanley's been right there in objective, a little bit over, a little bit under some years. And the Wasatch Mountains, over the last 7 or 8 years or so, has just consistently been about 800 elk over objective on that unit. Now looking at the southern region, really no change, well there's change, but there's not population increases being proposed in the objectives. But the one thing you do see is the greater plateau complex. This is a unit plan that combined the Monroe, Mount Dutton, and the plateau of subunits. And we put a bunch of GPS radio collars on these elk, and they really don't appreciate the boundaries that we set for them at all. And so they move off and on and they ebb and flow. And so instead of overreacting or underreacting with these permits, we kind of gave some categories, some ranges of what these elk populations can be. And that's what you're seeing there with that unit plan. Moving on to habitat management, really interested in monitoring, want to conduct range trend studies, look at habitat assessments, see the condition of our elk range. Want to protect and maintain the habitat that we have, whether it's on winter or summer range, minimize those impacts, mitigate the habitat loss, which is occurring on many of our elk units, and then support federal agencies in managing horse populations to improve objectives. This seemed to be a hot topic in a lot of the committees that we held. And then finally, improvements. Now this is an area that we've seen a lot of success with. We want to continue to cooperate with the various partners on habitat projects, improve these ranges, whether it's spying on summer range or PJ removal, enhancing water, those types of things, whatever the limiting factor may be, address it with habitat restoration. And it's been great. We've, over the last 10 years or so, through the Watershed Restoration Initiative, we've treated over 1.2 million acres with our various partners, much of which were sportsman driven, and spent close to about $150 million, which is pretty incredible. If you look at the highlights of the unit plans, there's some common threads. In a lot of these plans, a lot of language and a lot of tone that talked about working with private landowners, livestock producers, state and federal land agencies, tribal sportsmen and others to foster good relationships and manage for elk habitat. That seemed to be a big priority for many of the biologists as they wrote these plans and worked with committees. Also want to conduct aerial surveys, do our population modeling, and use a variety of animal self-harvest to manage the population objectives, which has been good. The last statewide elk plan that we proposed and that was accepted in December provided biologists with a lot more tools, which we're seeing being implemented this year and being good feedback so far. Want to use animal self-harvest and other management strategies to minimize crop degradation. That's a big priority for us. And monitor drought conditions and increase antelope self-permits if needed. Looking at some of the common themes from the regions, want to continue to co-manage elk on the Pilot Mountains with Nevada in the northern region and conduct a GPS collar study on the cache and assess feeding strategies at Harbor Ranch. And the northeast region, work with the Ute tribe to increase harvest, especially in areas where we have a lot of elk and a lot of degradation issues in units that are over objective, and continue to collar. Collect movement data, the radio collared elk, especially on the Wasatch. Southeast region, team monitor CWD positive areas, enhance habitat on some range limited areas, pretty important for us there. Central region, communicate with the Goshen tribe on elk management related issues, use private lands only permits to better distribute elk, specifically on the Wasatch unit, and use translocation as a management strategy to distribute elk and make progress towards the population objectives on the Oker Stanford unit. Some of these release sites would include Muskrat Canyon and Mack Canyon that are on the north end. And finally, the southern region. Talked a little bit about this earlier. Manage the Monroe, Mount Dutton, and that fish labeling that and the those units, the Boulder Caparrot. So all that mega unit is kind of what we call it, where these elk are going back and forth. Manage that into one plan, 10,400 elk with kind of some subcategories because those elk move. Want to increase communication with the stakeholders, and on the Southwest Desert unit, if 3 of the 5 goals that they set out that plan are met, they'd reconvene that elk committee to evaluate and discuss a potential population increase. And that's all I have. Thank you. And Mr. Chair, if you go through questions, I'm happy to answer any statewide level of questions. And we also have representation from every region where a population increase was proposed. So if we have site-specific questions, we've got to have an answer to these.
Summer habitat. You could have more elk in the summer that you don't have the water.
And it's going to come to haunt you in the winter habitat if we ever just have a normal winter. It's going to, you know, that's issues that, you know, it's going to be devastating if we have a normal winter and those elk have to come down as well by the areas. So my question is, how do you get to the depredation on the winter grounds when the elk come down? How are you going to address that when you have hundreds or thousands of elk invading these low-lying areas? Not just farms and places like that, but the subdivisions. I know you have trouble with the public when you destroy an area. Everybody gets mad at you. But what are you going to do when you have hundreds or thousands of them you're going to have to do something with? And that's going to another question.
Can I check the status of something before you go?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, so there's no doubt here that this was drier, and especially in the pockets of the Wasatch specifically, it was dry here. And one of the things that we've done with our depredation, your question is, what would we do if a lot of these elk came down? In some pockets in the state, when you get good winter, it helps our herds. We have units that when we get those snows that come down and they push those elk to lower elevations, our success rates jump through the roof. It can be a good thing. There's other units where it's not a good thing because we're exactly what you're talking about, where you really need to get your harvest in October as opposed to waiting till later months because of subdivisions and different things. So it really depends on the unit on when those snows help us and when they don't. The other thing is, with the last statewide plan, we were really transparent. We said, hey, depredation is going to be a priority, and if we need to do division removal, we know it's not popular, but in some cases, if that's the best avenue to take, we're going to do it. Because our perspective is, if you have a big unit, say the Wasatch or one of these other ones, and you have problematic into agricultural fields to areas that we just simply don't want, for every elk that you can harvest there, that's an elk you can grow on a better part of the mountain. So that's not something that we're going to ignore. If we have problem elk, we're willing to harvest them. And I think the tone of the sportsmen have changed. Last night, I don't know if he's here or not, Troy Justinson stood up and he said, guys, if we have too many elk in areas as sportsmen, we need to support the division in getting that harvest where we need to. It's about proper management. I think there was a time in our agency's history where it was, let's grow these elk. And I think the challenge of today's biologists and our racks and board process is how do we properly manage these elk? And it might be some high numbers of harvest in areas that we haven't had that before. So I hope that helps, but I know you have more questions. I just wanted to address that.
I want to bring up one instance. I was on that Wasatch committee thing, and I voted against it. I wasn't on record, but I want to be on record that I did vote against the Forest Service. I shouldn't have been voted against it, but there was one individual voted for the elk increase, and then in the next statement, he talks about how him and a group of guys kept a herd of elk away from the guy's haystack for over 30 days. So he wants more elk. They had to spend 30 nights keeping his elk away from his haystack. So are you going to have enough people to keep all these elk away from everybody's haystack in the park?
We do have some staff. Do we have enough? Probably not. But I think that's where our willingness to harvest depredating elk needs to come in more. I mean, if we got a problem elk, I don't know why we tolerate it. We've said for several years now that we want healthy, robust populations of elk and deer, but we don't want to grow on the backs of tribal landowners, especially tribal landowners that don't want to tolerate it.
And then,
Mr. Chairman, could I address that real quick, the Heber issue with the elk? I hear what you're saying, Larry, but I have a little bit of a different take on that, in that the fact that that particular individual and a number of sportsmen we did together were willing to put in the effort to help address issues that the land owners were having. And that to me shows a lot of commitment from sportsmen to help address the issues. And then the other thing I want to touch on is specific on the Wasatch. Well, the objective is going up, that's the recommendation. That is not putting more elk on the ground, as elk are already there. And so we're not asking sportsmen aren't asking for more out on Wasatch. We're just asking to be able to keep what's there. But I just wanted to point that out that we're not. This recommendation is to grow more out, is to maintain what's currently there.
Are they going to maintain that? Is my question.
And I'll address that too. And this justice a very valid concern. And I would say that we have proven that we can manage the current objective. We've tried for years, we can't. But we have held the elk on the Wasatch around that 8,000, 8,500 number for a number of years. And to me, that proves that we can manage that particular objective. That's my opinion.
I had one more question about the transplant of elk, the Stansberries. Are these going to be the problem elk from other areas that you're going to need a home for?
It's probably a better question for the region. I don't know the you know,
well, you're going to have issues with depredation in other areas, and you're going to need a home for a bunch of elk. Is the stand, the transplant areas, are going to be the, is that going to be, you know, going to be a cure-all?
I think staff has that.
So I think the answer to that is no. And I guess that depends on your opinion. We are leaving the option out to bring elk that we are not having issues with, but just having population issues with in Heber City. Not necessarily for depredation reasons, just in an effort to help control the population on the Wasatch Mountains. So we are leaving that option open as to bring or translocate in some of those elk. But I think, honestly, one of the issues is the majority of that population increase would go to the Stansberry, not the Oker side. And currently, the population on that is so low, I don't know that they've even hit their exponential growth curve. So I think in years to come, there won't be a need for any translocation. But maybe for the first couple of years, it could solve two problems. And that's kind of the way I look at it. It's not necessarily problem elk. It's population control and maybe trying to reach an objective.
Do you know that? Have you been on that range you're talking about transplanting these elk to?
I have, yes.
What's the water like?
So Tom would be a better one to answer that because he is the biologist, but I'll let him address that so I don't have to get corrected on that, if you're okay with that.
Yeah.
So I guess specifically you're asking about the...
Do you have summer water to be able to drive in that range?
Yeah, there is actually a lot of those drainages have water clear up. The problem, I guess, you're looking at the problem with water is it's piped mostly from the mouth of the canyon down on the winter range. And so it's not typically a problem for elk. The deer do it too. It's snow they use, but in the upper elevations, there's pretty good water.
And it's my understanding.
A lot of those main canyons have water flowing them all year round.
Well, it's my understanding. A lot of the livestock producers have cut numbers, even not run the livestock up there because of the water situation. There wasn't enough water to water livestock.
I haven't been aware of that one. Cut back some forest on that.
I hope there's a deer here.
If anything, the fires that we've had has created more vegetation, more grass for elk and sheep. But I wasn't aware of any cutbacks in the forest.
These would have came years ago. But I think there's a guy here that will address that later in the comment there.
Maybe so. I just got a call from Todd Arvin, who's the Grantsville Grazing Association manager, and he didn't see any issues with elk as long as we, you know, stuck with the plan and used the tools that we had to deal with some of the issues that might come up. But he was all in favor of it.
Well, it's good that land ownership, I know a lot of it is Kennecott now, Grantsville land.
That's on the Oker side.
But the standard, this is the entire union land thing I'm looking at. But there's a lot of concern about the ranchers in that part of the area. The water is low. They're getting the elk on them. They're not going to be able to going to create a bigger issue. And from the people that I've talked to, it's going to, you know, that's going to hit them the hardest. And I just don't know that that was a good.
I haven't heard of any water concerns from anybody in the committee. We've got Castle Rock land and livestock in favor of it. We've got the bulk of the private lands, especially on the west side. They're in favor of having elk. Matter of fact, the release site for any elk is on that side, just north of their property. There's a little group of elk already wintering there. We're hoping that if we gave them a few more elk, they would stay and winter on that side. But not aware of any water issues of any sort. So.
Speak louder.
Sorry.
Well, I hope the pipeline individual will speak up about the water because he personally knows how it is. But these are two areas of concern of mine. I just wanted to bring them up. And I think there's flaws in both areas. And, you know, I can't say about the rest of the plan. But in these two areas, there's flaws.
I mean, we can work with our habitat section and develop some water issues, develop some of the springs if we need to, or protect the springs if we need to. We have some habitat projects that we can put towards that.
Should they be in place before the elk
arrive? Well, we're not talking about moving 1,000 elk overnight. We're talking about moving maybe 100 or so, you know, for first couple of years of that. And if we have problems before we get to 1,000, we'll deal with those. I mean, we can let the elk tell us where we need to address some problems, and we'll deal with that according to the plan.
Well, this Stansbury unit is going to affect the whole desert.
I don't see them moving off of the Stansbury. We have a little group that's in.
You can put collars on them.
We could put sightability collars on them.
I would suggest some collars to see where they go.
Sure. Yeah, we can do that.
If they get transplanted better.
We certainly can do that. I don't see a problem with that. We've done it in some of the other units when we've got Park City Elk, we put collars on them. So, yeah, we can do that.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Jesse. I'll leave you alone now.
No, okay. I just want to make a quick observation. Larry, I appreciate the hard comments, the hard questions. And the reason I think is because if we can't answer that, if we didn't have the strategies in place, and if we didn't struggle through some of these issues with the committees and internally, I think I'd want you to pass these plans. But a lot of these challenges are really well thought out, and we have so many additional tools now. And I think it's a different time in our agency to develop and work with some things.
If I could just for half a second too, because Justin got up and said, you know, it's not the intent of the state to grow elk on the backs of landowners, and I just want to echo that sentiment from the region standpoint as well. Our philosophy and Tom's philosophy has been if the elk are in trouble in places that they shouldn't, then we use the tools to get rid of them, and that is our philosophy moving forward as well. And so the fears that we have of them moving on, there are most certainly going to be depredation issues and elk moving into locations that are not ideal. But when you grow a population, that's just the natural effect of things. And we fully anticipate that the Stansbury in years to come will not be any different from that. But it is our intent from the region and as the unit management as a whole to take care of those issues and handle them aggressively. So when there are issues that arise, and we take care of them and we don't sit on our hands and just expect the landowner to shoulder that blame, but it is something that we work cooperatively with to address and to move forward.
These elk are actually migrating and moving very well by themselves. There's one problem with the I-15 corridor that's stopping them from coming west, but there's other elk moving and they are going on ranges that are not historically there. Remember, you know, some areas they don't even want them there. Be able to move into those areas. And I know you guys are trying, and you've been, the DNR's been helpful to try to solve the problems, but disagree with Dr. Watts. I think they will be nuisance elk in other areas, and there will be a quick fix, because, you know, public's not going to want to see them come down. You'll have more response from that, but I don't think we should be transporting them. They're moving, they're increasing by themselves very well. That's my opinion.
Thank you. Any other questions from the ride?
I have a question. I can piggyback on some of Larry's comments. When you guys talk about drought, it's interesting. We've been in a drought, and we continue to be in drought conditions right now. And this fall is not looking good at all. You know, typically on the forest, we can shut roads down because we have a lot of snow. We haven't shut a lot of roads down on the forest because it's dry right now, and conditions are just fine. So, and to go with that, we're seeing the continued trend of a lot of our springs drying up. A lot of our livestock permittees have taken voluntary reductions on their ranges in order because of the lack of water. And so that needs to be addressed, I think, somewhere in the elk management plan. Just to say you're going to increase the number of elk permits isn't enough. You need to have a better drought management plan and in order to address that. So as a multiple use land manager, I'm in a tough spot. It's hard for me to continue to encourage the livestock industry to take voluntary reductions and at the same time vote for high elk numbers on public land. It's just a difficult position to be in. And so, you know, until we get out of the drought or until we figure out how to deal with the drought, it's going to be a tough management.
Is there any other questions from the ride? Okay, questions from the public. I have several cards here. Any questions that you have? Have a comment card if you want any questions. Please state your name.
Yeah, my name is Mike O'Brien, and I'm curious about the route that was taken this year with the cow tag issuing to private landowners and how the objectives were met, and how that's going to be planned for, you know, not just this next year, but moving forward. It was, you know, here on the Wasatch, that was a pretty big deal to me and a lot of other hunters, and wondering, you know, private land access is not something that that comes easy for a lot of sportsmen, I think, and just wondering how that plays into the management of these herds and these numbers that we're looking at.
Sure. Yeah, it's a great question. The first part of your question was centered around how are the private land permits.
With the issuance of all those tags, right? I think it was 2,000 on the Wasatch. How many were filled roughly?
So yeah, we haven't even sold all of them out.
Yeah.
No. What's that?
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. No, we haven't sold them all out on the Wasatch subunits, and we won't know until the end of January, mm-hmm. when the season ends, and do those harvest reports as to what the total harvesting impact was, so it's still a little premature. But some of the calls that I've got seem like the people that have obtained them have had high success rates, mm-hmm. and that's anecdotal. It's probably too premature to speculate on that, but because those elk are on private lands, we know that our color data show that they're getting these permits and they're being successful, then that's a good thing. You're getting the harvest where you need to, you're pushing them back onto the public land. Probably too early to tell and to give you a good assessment of how it's going.
Okay, and then moving forward, is that a tool that you'll continue to use and excluding, you know, the public land harvest of cow tags during?
I think if it's successful, we'll certainly keep using that. I mean, this is the first year we've ever tried it,
right.
You know, 4 months into a 6 month season. Yeah, but if it's successful and it redistributes out and it gets harvested where we need to, we would certainly do it. But I think long term, the down the road plan, mm-hmm. is to make sure there's balance, that there's adequate harvest on the private lands, and that public hunter opportunities we don't have success rates in the teens or the single digits. We have that on certain hunts at some points. And that's not something we're excited about. That's certainly something hunters are excited about. But it's going to take retraining out. The way you do that is you back off pressure on the public land. You allow those elk to not feel comfortable on private land, mm-hmm. and then you strike that balance down the road. So, does that help?
Yeah, it does help. I just had a lot of experience this year trying to contact a lot of private landowners in the area,
yeah.
And was just, you know, shot down, you know, 100% of the time. And so I'm just, you know, wondering how that's going for others, and you know, what that's looking like.
It's tough because it's a strategy that indirectly helps public hunters.
Sure.
Because that permit may not be for every public hunter.
Right.
And it may just not be good, especially if you think of the access. But down the road, if it pushes those elk out in public
and distributes them more evenly.
Correct. Then when gotcha. You go out, those elk are available. Mm-hmm. You have a better hunt.
Okay. So. Thanks.
Any other questions involved in the presentation? I have a question, Justin. Can you still purchase a private license for that?
You can, yes.
Okay. Okay. We'll move into our comment section for the public. Have several cards here. Chris Carlin.
Thank you. My name is Chris Carlin, representing Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife tonight, and I'm here to voice SFW support for the elk management plan revisions that were presented by Justin Chen and the Division of Wildlife, and also to just let everyone know on the rack that SFW members really value not only the science and the thoroughness and the professionalism that the division, biologists, and other staffers and employees bring to the whole process of managing elk and other big game, but we really appreciate our opportunity, I guess, to participate in that process. It, speaking firsthand, we know that process, as Justin mentioned, did involve multiple interested parties. It was very fair in the discussion, very thorough in exploring lots of avenues for the existing, the current elk plan, as well as these many of these proposals. We just appreciate it. We hope it continues, and we're here to support them in the continuation of that process. We think it's high quality. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Okay, Randy Quayle.
My name is Randy Quayle. I am here on behalf. My name is Randy Quayle. I'm here on behalf of you of the Timber Oaks Archery Club, and we are in agreement with the present elk management plan that's been set forward by the DWR tonight. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ken Alter.
Close enough.
I'm Ken Becker. I'm representing the Utah Bowman Association, and we would also like to show our support for the division's proposal to raise the elk objective. We did also have a seat on one of the councils or one of the committees for the Wasatch elk herd, and so we did get some good input on that. The division value our input and by just inviting us there, so we just want to show that we do support what the division and those committees have all decided to raise the elk objective to. Thanks.
Thank you. Dave. Bill Christensen.
Yes, I'm Bill Christensen. I'm the regional director for the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. Mr. Chairman and RAC members, thank you very much for all the time you spend for our wildlife resources and its management. I'd like to thank Justin and all the staff of the Division of Wildlife that are here and all the sportsmen that are here. We appreciate all the time that's gone into this. I had a chance in the past to serve on the Painless Lake Elk Committee, and we've been big proponents of pushing these elk committees and Having a chance to serve on the Elk Advisory Committee that helped put together the Elk Management Plan and being able to participate in the Wasatch Committee, we're very, very supportive of these new elk population objectives and give our full-fledged support for these. These committees are diverse. They're made up of all the local interests. What's nice about these committees is that they're local. They're locally based. And we believe strongly that wildlife management that starts at the local level is more effective. And we wholeheartedly support the division objectives and ask that you support these as well. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill. Okay, don't have any other cards. Is there any other comments from the comments? We'll bring it back to the rack of your discussion. Motion's received.
I just want to make one comment as far as the water. I know that there's a lot of sportsmen's groups that are willing and do not only participate with labor as well as funds to do any water projects, especially here in the central region, that if that opportunity was available, and I'm pretty sure that that could be facilitated to help maybe ease some of the water concerns. I realize it's got to rain to fill a guzzler, but it usually does rain at least a couple times a year. So, but and that's probably not limited just to guzzlers too, if there's other projects that need to be done. My experience has been that when we've done even some other water projects, that if you can work hand in hand and actually develop an overflow pond that would help with agriculture as well, that becomes a win-win for everybody. And so, I just want to make that comment known that I know that there's a lot of people who are willing to do that and put that effort out there to try to keep the elk up on the mountain as well.
Thanks, Ron.
We appreciate, you know, Michelle, I think the water projects also have to be on federal range public lands. They're talking about dispersing elk off of private lands. But if the water's on private lands, it don't matter how much you wrap someone to get killed, they're still going to come back for a drink. I have mentioned some of you guys these pictures. You know, if you guys didn't see them down there, if you don't notice all the elk, they're night pictures. They're not day pictures, they're far. They're night pictures. You can't harass elk, you can't disperse elk at night. I think it's illegal. So, there needs to be development on federal lands also, not just private lands. So, that needs to be addressed also. But we appreciate the help. We know there's help from the sportsman's groups. We have some offerings from some of them. And look at the whole picture. Not just where do you want the help to stay? Thanks.
Yeah, I'd just like to recognize the work that the division has put into these plans. Justin and the local biologists and DW employees that have run these committees had the opportunity to sit on the statewide element where we designed a number of these strategies that are being used right now and going into these unit plans as well. I also had the opportunity to sit on the Wasatch Elk Run, and I appreciate the opportunity to do both. I'm in support of these recommendations, and I think we owe it to the division to support them as well. They put a lot of work into it. I don't believe that they're doing it with any intent to put more animals on the range than the range can handle. And I do believe that we have the tools in place in the event of a hard winter or a hard summer to address reductions when necessary. And I'd like to point out that we have done that in the past. A few years ago, I don't remember exactly which year, it was 2012, when we had some heavy droughts during the summer, and the Wildlife Board issued a bunch of last-minute additional cow tax that obviously went for sale over open counter in September to the public to address you know, drought issues. So the division is willing to address those issues when we're there. And I applaud it for that. And I think these plans are appropriate and well balanced. And I'd like to see support.
Mr. Chair, that being said, I'd like to make a motion that we accept the elk management plan as presented tonight.
Okay, we have a motion on the table for discussion. Yeah.
Second.
Seconded. Okay, any discussion? Okay, call for a vote. All in favor of the presentation as presented? Eight in favor, all opposed. Two opposed. Christine, you are. Okay. And so we were eight in favor and two opposed to the pan. The proposal passes as presented. Okay, we'll move on then. Bucks, Bulls, and Bucks of Lifetime, 2017 season dates, application timeline, Justin.
Into the Gray Canyon and Jack Creek units. In the past, these were
combined, and what we have was we're season dates from about the first 2 weeks in November and then the last 2 weeks in November. And what we've done is we've combined the dates to where it's a 30-day hunt, and we've split these units out spatially to force some harvest up into the jackfruit unit, which is a really difficult unit to access. Also, we'd like to alter the San Juan South, Big Horn Chief boundary, and includes the San Juan River. We augmented many populations down there in that area of the units doing really well, and we'd like to allow hunters to go down there and harvest. Also, we'd like to add an archery and muzzleloader management buck hunt in the Henry Mountains. This last spring, we brought recommendations through, and we were exceeding the 40 to 55 bucks per 100 does for that unit. And so we wanted to increase more permits, but to add more on top of the many hunters that we already had in that limited 5-day season, the first of November, wasn't a good fit, especially where you have an animal point restriction and you're trying to figure out if it's a legal buck or not. This is a little outside the box for us, but we'd like to propose these tonight for management buck hunts on the archery and muzzleloader units on the things. And then finally, I recommend adding a pronghorn archery hunt in the Santa Fe Desert, 9 Mile Range Creek, and muzzleloader hunt on the Santa Fe Northern units. Northern region, recommend discontinuing the Pilot Mountain Big Horn Sheep Hunt. And this is one that we generally turn on and off every other year. We co-manage and serve within that. Central region, recommend discontinuing the Stansbury Mountains Big Horn Sheep Hunt. This population has been declining as of late. Like to cancel that hunt for this next year. And then finally, the Northeast region. I'd like to recommend altering the Footless Wild Horse Bench Hunt to include the Nine Mountain area. Season dates in this area would be very long, August 1st to January 31st. And the idea here is we have bison that regularly swim across the Green River from the Footless out of the Nine Mountain. We don't have a management plan on the beans. Thus, we haven't had a hunt boundary. So that way, if this occurs, we can direct hunters to get harvest to move those animals back. Also, we'd like to add a cow bison hunt on the book list. We're excited about that. Change some season dates on the book list bison hunt that we've had, that hunter's choice one, to October 14th to December 1st. And change season dates on the North Slope Three Corners out, just move back a week. And then finally, we'd like to recommend combining the North Slope Three Corners bear top and the West Dagger Big Horn Sheep units into one hunt. For that population in the Northeast region. Bison, yeah. I pressed it with bison. Sorry about that. Okay, good catch. Let's see. At the last round of RADs, the Utah Bowman's Association, they came out with an informational proposal. And at the last wildlife board meeting, they proposed a once-in-a-lifetime archery-only hunting experience. And it was just to get feedback from the public on what their thoughts were on that. The idea was hunters would exchange a once-in-a-lifetime permit for an archery-only permit with expanded season days. The wildlife board asked us to take a look and review that proposal and provide a recommendation to the RADs this November. And so as we looked at the data on our four once-in-a-lifetime species, the Big Horn Sheep, Mountain Goats, Moose, and Bison, we kind of put some data in there. But this wasn't presented in the Heber proposal. We wanted to know just some baseline information on these types of hunts. So for Big Horn Sheep, 96% of the hunters are successful. They hunt about an average of 6.5 days, and their season dates are really long. So for deadheads, it's about 51 days on average, and for Rockies, it's about 33. And the number of permits per hunt on average is 3. So we have 25 Rocky or Desert Big Horn Sheep hunts with an average of 3 permits per hunt. And as you can see there on the left, the graph, what we did is just kind of categorize the permits. So 84% of the hunts that we have for Big Horn Sheep have between 1 and 5 permits. And a lot of these hunts, they only have 1 permit in them. And so if a hunter wanted to have an archery-only experience, they can put into those permits and obtain that and have the entire unit by themselves. So this is kind of what we were looking at as we were thinking through the proposal we were presenting tonight. Mountain goats, it's a little different. have a lot more of the permits that move into the 6 to 10 range and some that move into the 16 to 20 range. But you still have several hunts that have between 1 to 5 permits. Success rates are high, 96%, 3.5 days hunted on average, long season lengths, 50 days. And this was expanded by the RACs and boards about 2 years ago to give more time a field and average number of permits per hunt. Bison, there's a lot more permits for every bison hunt. You know, the average, the bulk of the hunts have between 11 and 15 permits. So it's not like the big horn sheep and some of the mountain goats one where you only have one or two permits per hunt. A lot more people in the field at the same time. Success rates are high, 85%. Days hunted on average, 3.5. Season lengths are about 24 days, and permits per hunt is about 14 on average. And then finally, food moves. Really high success rates, 94%. Days in the field, 4. Season length, 34 days, and average number of permits per hunt is 6. I think the Wasatch unit really pulls that number up a little bit. As you can see, 3/4 of our hunts have between 1 and 5 permits on them. And so as we looked at this data, and we said, okay, what can we do? What makes sense? With the UBER proposal that we heard as an informational, what the division is proposing tonight is to recommend adding a 7-day extension to the end of each once in a lifetime hunt that would be our trail. And so this wouldn't be Malamon Hamilton Island or new the Pilot Mountain CWUs for hunts that end on January 31st. And then if you have multiple once-in-a-lifetime hunts for the same unit, for the same species, that 7-day extension would be applied at the end of the last hunt. So on the Henrys, for instance, we have 4 bison hunts. It doesn't make sense to give hunters 7 days at the end of their hunt when they're overlapped with all the rightful bison hunters. So at the end of the last bison hunt, everybody would be get 7 days if they were successful. Some of the things we need to point out, though, is access to some hunt areas is not guaranteed, and aerial surveys may occur during these hunts, especially on some of the desert big one sheep permits. But again, the reason we went with this is if we looked at it and looked at the data, a lot of the hunts that we have, you can put in and they only have one permit. And so you already have that archery only once in a lifetime experience by yourself if you drew it, and you'd be on the same drawing as everybody else. Some key dates for 2017, big game drawing for Bucks Bulls once in a lifetime, dedicated hunter applicants and lifetime license holders. It's January 26th through March 2nd. Application period is extended through March 16th, and we'll have results posted by the end of May. And then finally, some key dates for hunters with disabilities. We present this every year, but it's essentially a token flying day pre or post hunt on these general season units for hunters with disabilities. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Seven days at the end of the once in a lifetime.
as a good compromise. I enjoyed it. But I think it's exciting. I honestly think that those who have been chasing an animal and haven't had that opportunity to maybe harvest an animal, at least they can go back out in the field and maybe have success still. So I think it's a great idea. If anything, it also gives the partners a little bit of a chance to have some one-on-one time if they choose to do so. So that's my opinion.
Sure makes it a lot less complicated.
Well, and as we looked at it, that was one of the things we looked at was on the big horn sheep and mountain goat house. If you wanted to kind of archery only, we had units that only have one or two permits. Like you look at our desert units, 6 of the 12 units have 2 permits or less. And same thing with our Rocky Mountain units. 6 of the 13 permits have 2 permits or less. And so you put in for those, and you essentially have the unit yourself.
Okay, we'll take it to the public. Is there any questions of Ben?
Just on the late muzzleloader hunt on the boulder that you're recommending to eliminate, you know the 3-year running here, the last 3-year buck to doe ratios are each individual year?
The top of my head, I think it's 16 and some change. And then 19, and then I think it's 20.6. So we're trending in the right way. The reason that we took it off is because, as you look at the plan, it says that 3-year average has to be above 20. So we're happy with the unit. We think it's trending right. But in order to manage the letter of the law plan, we studied the best fit for folks.
Yeah, what's the average, 3-year average?
Something that's like design and some of those that are really far south, they have really protracted breeding seasons, really protracted ruts, so you need to be ready throughout the fall.
Okay, any other questions from the room? Okay, any questions from the public?
Three corners elk season.
My name's Chris Carmen with SFW again. Justin, I just noticed that bullet point on the state corners. No, three corners Daggett elk season that got pushed back a week. I'm just curious, is there something going on there? Is there a conflict with another hunt or too many dead elk, or what was the reasoning there?
Yeah, so that's a unit that we those elk go between us and Wyoming and Colorado,
right?
And so we have in the past what we call tri-state agreements, where we say, okay, what's best for these elk, and we've altered hunting dates so where we're states are putting pressure on these elk at the same time. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they just ping pong them. We hunt them, they're on a cross, and then they hunt them, they come back, and at the end of the day, we want some harvest. And so Amy, the biologist up there, she's exceptional. She coordinates really well with those neighboring states on kind of what we're working.
So it's just a consistent date, state by state, so the pressure's on all at once in all places?
Yeah, we were hunting earlier. It's
just a matchup, so the hunting pressure's all at the same time in all three states.
Okay, makes sense. And I just have friends who hunt there, and I was curious. So. Good answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Excuse me. My name is Jeremy Anderson with the Mule Deer Foundation. Justin, one question for you. First of all, great presentation. Thank you and to all the rest of the division for all your work on this. With the limitations being taken off the muzzleloader optics last year, and we're having some possible new late muzzleloader hunts, I'm curious, do we know... You know, I know it's a three-year average, but how did it go this year? Did we thin the herd before we, on the muzzleloader hunt? We don't have that data yet.
Yeah, we don't yet. We'll get our classification data here. Probably short. I think Tom's already classifying on some of your units in the West Desert, but we'll be classifying November, December, and get that like to doe ratio. And see what that looks like. From everything I hear, the muzzleloader hunts and the rifle hunts had exceptional success.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so, but with that, we're growing a lot of deer. If you look at our buck to doe ratio, it's been climbing over the last 5 years to where we had a lot of excess bucks on these units. And it's my hope that hunters were successful and that we keep those buck to doe ratios at our
level. And I think that's what we've heard, it's just a great. Success rates and things like that, and we're all for more opportunity, obviously, more hunter opportunity. Just curious if that will go into some of the thought process on that.
Yeah, this would be our commitment. I mean, on these units that are managed for 8-20, if we really got into them too much and we're setting them not exceeding 20 bucks per 100 does, like you said, on the boulder, we would
right.
Simply recommend you do away with that.
Perfect.
See if the muzzleloader or not.
Okay. Hey, thank you for your time and all your guys' work.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, comments on the presentation. Chris Carlin.
Thank you again. Chris Carlin with the Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. SFW supports the Bucks Bulls once in a lifetime season date and application timeline proposals as presented by the division and Justin Shannon. Pardon me, with two exceptions. One of them being SFW's recommendation would be to keep that late muzzleloader deer hunt on the Boulder Preparewich unit because, as has been mentioned, the trend on the buck doe ratio is going in the right direction. It's getting very close to a planner objective. We like that too, and we know and recognize that the division is mandated to manage the plan. We would hate to see that opportunity go away. It's a wonderful hunt for a lot of our members and a lot of hunters in general. And with that trend going in the right direction, we hope that maybe there's some reconsideration there not to eliminate that hunt. So that's one exception. And the second being, instead of the what's been outlined by the division, the proposal for the seven-day archery-only extended season for hunters who draw that once-in-a-lifetime tag, we have provided each of you with a printout that you should have in front of you that stems from UBA's, Utah Bowman Association's original thought. And since that Wildlife Board meeting, there's a lot of excitement about the idea of an archery-only once-in-a-lifetime hunt among the four groups that you see listed here, SFW, UBA, the Mule Deer Foundation, and Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. We've had lots of discussion and planning sessions to explore this. We recognize we're not the biologists, but we are, again, excited. There's a lot of excitement about the idea of what you see here, and without going through every little detail, all of the once-in-a-lifetime species would be included except for moose, and there are proposed season dates that pretty much down the line avoid the core rut season, and the more premium dates that the rifle hunters who draw those once-in-a-lifetime species would be hunting with that tag. So there's not a lot of conflict there, but these, we see these hunts as archery only hunts and not just an archery extension for those who hunt with a rifle. This would be a totally different proposal, and there's several points that benefits to this. First of all, and listed here at the bottom, this proposal would address point creep because there's additional opportunity, yet the opportunity is difficult. These would be difficult hunts, marginal by some standards, and yet it would allow new hunting opportunity and help address point creep. That's a major benefit. So new opportunity there is point number two. They have good potential for a lower success rate, and that may be a benefit to the population numbers, but again, still providing the opportunity. And archers, as you all may know, archery hunters will often take an animal that a rifle hunter may never consider, even though that animal may be in his or her crosshairs. And we see that as a benefit because, for example, sheep is a great example, maybe the best example. There's a lot of older rams that may not have achieved the mass or the gross score that a lot of trophy hunters are really looking for, and a rifle hunter will pass on every time in hopes for a better scoring animal. Whereas a true archery hunter often won't pass an animal like that, and we may have the opportunity for a take on some animals that are living their lives and dying of old age and don't really achieve that classification. So there's again an opportunity that's maybe going missed that we collectively feel should be considered as new opportunity to again issue a few more tags to these archery-only hunters and not just extending the rifle hunters' opportunity with archery gear on the same unit and with the same tag. This is a different proposal. So these, again, would be additional tags, point number five. And again, I said it before, but the season dates that we're looking at would generally avoid the core rut and the more premium time frames that the rifle hunters would find themselves in the field pursuing these animals. We, again, are not biologists. We recognize that there would need to be much discussion and planning, and certainly the biologist input above all. But we hope that this RAC might consider this proposal and discuss it and maybe vote to bring the idea to the Wildlife Board. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Can I move?
Thank you again, Kenneth Edgar from the Utah Bowman Association. As Chris just said, I would like to agree with all that the DWR has proposed, minus the one-week extension that the archers would have, or archers that the hunters would have, for an archery opportunity on the once-in-a-lifetime hunt. As he mentioned, during the September racks, you were brought a proposal to all the racks in the Wildlife Board to create an auditory-only opportunity in the once-in-a-lifetime sphere. And through that journey, we did learn that not only was there a little more excitement there for opportunities outside of the framework that's already set there between the racks and also inside the division. So we went back and, as I said, collaborated with SSW, MVF, RMEF, and created this extra proposal for these new archery-only hunts. And so with that, as I said, you know, we got minimal impact on that, potential some more opportunity with potential lower harvest rate on that. So as the rep here, we'd really like to back that with the other members of the party. We created that amendment and put the rest of the division's proposals, as usual, they do a great job of taking the time, looking at all the avenues, and making sure they come forward with good proposals every year. So we agree with everything, but the once-in-a-lifetime extension, the week extension, that did kind of come out of our original proposal and gave us a little extra information to actually go forward with some other options that could potentially help all parties involved. Thanks.
Thank you. Randy Quayle.
Thanks again. I'm Randy Quayle. I'm here on behalf of the Indianapolis Archery. We're also in agreement with the Bucks, Bulls, and once-in-a-lifetime hunts as per put forth by the BWR, with the exception of the 7-day extended archery hunt at the end. We would like to agree with the proposal that's just been made by Chris, and that would be to have the archery-only hunts for the Desert Bighorn, Rocky Mountain, Golden, and Buffalo. Thank you.
Thank you. Leo Christensen.
Bill Christensen, Rocky Mountain Health Foundation. Thanks again, Mr. Chairman and Regional Advisory Council members. The Rocky Mountain Health Foundation thanks the division and certainly supports the Bucks, Bulls, and once-in-a-lifetime recommendations, with the exception of the archery hunt extension. We do support the once-in-a-lifetime archery-only hunts as we presented. Chris did a good job of outlining that, and we welcome the opportunity to partner with Utah Bowmen's Association and Source of Fish and Wildlife and the Mule Deer Foundation, and ask that you consider and support this recommendation, and we'll work with the division to iron out any specifics and as we work towards presenting that at the Wildlife Board meeting. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Hey, Mark Christensen. Well, Mike's coming up here. I hope all of you had an opportunity to read this email that we sent out. That's about all the arrived members of the board. And it's a little bit of discrepancy and opportunity for kids that are born a certain time of year, not born a certain time of year.
Exactly.
In regards to these coming up. So, Mike, go ahead.
Mike Christensen, thanks, Richard, for taking the time to bring us to that. So, with youth hunting an opportunity, the state defines, the DWR defines youth in one aspect, but the application periods and the way the hunts lay out dictate a different avenue to distribute those permits. And this goes for most all youth permits, but it really runs into the case with the management buck tags on the Pawnee and the Hoover Mountains. And each of you think of your birthdays and think of your kids' birthdays. If you were born between January 1 and July 31st, you or your children are disqualified from 50% of the youth tags for those hunts. The reason why is because 50% of those permits are given as bonus tags to the youth with the highest number of points. And if the way it lays out, a person, a child or a youth born between January 1st and July 31st can never reach that highest level of point total because of how the age is defined. So the easiest way to make it so those 100% of those tags are available to all youth would simply be to not distribute those permits as bonus permits. They would, they'd still be able to earn points and they'd still use their points in that system, but 50% of those tags wouldn't go to the youth born between August 1st and December 31st. Does that make sense? So it's a pretty straightforward thing. And I don't think there was any intent that, I think it's just one of those housekeeping things that as this has played out over time and we have to address certain, avenues of distribution and things come up that we didn't realize would happen at the start and now they have to happen. So are we going to address them or not? So I would just ask that you ask the board to take a look at that and to hopefully address that. Like I said, the easiest way to do it would just, we've kind of got the precedent set with the youth end goal tags. If you're a youth, you put in, and if you draw it, you draw it. If you don't, you don't. Sorry, but it's kind of the same logic there. And I don't want to muddy the waters with that, but on the once in a lifetime archery opportunity, I think it would behoove us to maybe ask Utah hunters what they kind of think about that. In a survey that we do on many committees, find out, get a little feedback from the end user. But thank you.
So Mike, let me ask you something.
Sure.
So are you saying that a youth puts in for Henry Madison's tag, they wouldn't use bonus points?
No, they would. They would gain bonus points. They would use bonus points. But half of the permits wouldn't go to the youth with the most bonus points. If you look at that chart that I emailed out to you, it kind of explains it fairly simply. I know that the legislature lowered the age down to 12 that can apply for once in a lifetime and limited entry. So that chart kind of goes off the, but it's the same principle. If you look at that, I don't want to sit here and explain it. You guys can read it. You're smarter than I am. You're smarter. So
if they just made it so that if you were born during that year, is that?
Well, I think there's become some technical difficulties, and I know that we have the women over here that run this part of the division, which is great that they're here tonight. They probably don't want to be called out on this. But I think that if you just didn't do the bonus, don't give 50% of the bonus or 50% of the permits to the ones with the most bonus points, then all youth have the chance to draw all the permits. 100% of the youth have the chance to draw 100% of the permits under that scenario. Under the current scenario, 40% of the youth have a chance at 50% of the tags. And 60% of the youth have 0% chance at 50% of the tags. That's the way it currently is. So.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Is someone going to address that on the division side? Yeah, here we go.
Sorry, Lindy.
Oh, you're good. Lindy Body. This has been a conversation that Mike and I have had over the last year. Right now, it's when you apply for a management buck deer hunt that he's talking about, 30% do go to the youth that apply, 30% go to 65 and older that apply, and then 40% of the tags do go to everyone else that applies in for that hunt. I can't remember all the, this was like a year ago when Mike and I talked about it, so I can't remember all the details and all the data that I gave Mike on it, but yes, 50% of max point holders of the youth, get 50% of the tags that are allotted to the youth. And that's kind of where Mike is coming to, because of the whole age. You know, 17 years or younger than July 31st. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So what's your question? What do you want me to do?
So just to clarify, make sure I've got this right.
Yes.
Based on when you're born, what part of the year you're born, you can never, as a youth, you would never reach max points, where the other kids born during the other part of the year would reach max points.
Yes.
That is correct, but it's just like school year. You know, some kids are born August 31st, and some are born September 1st.
But everybody gets to go to
school sooner. No matter what date you get out there, there's always going to affect someone. No matter what the date is. You know, I can definitely get back to you guys, go to the board meeting, get more data. Like I said, I don't have any of my information, so I'm just trying to remember from a year ago. But I can definitely get more data and talk about it more.
Okay. I have a question. Mm-hmm. Let's say one of you, the youth that don't draw out of that Lawrence Point course, okay? Do they then go into the general?
Yeah, into the other point. Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they draw in there with everybody else.
Yep.
They have opportunity in there.
Yep.
But they don't.
The youth would have two chances of drawing that deer tag with a bonus point that they could still use as an adult once they hit that 17 years or over age. It's the same bonus point.
But 40% of the youth have three chances to draw that permit.
So, like I said, you guys can talk about it and do what you want as the RAC, and I can gather more data for the board meeting, so I don't have my notes or anything like that. Of course, I did get what Mike handed out to you guys either. So I don't know quite exactly sure what he gave you guys.
I guess I'm just saying, I just copied and pasted the email that I sent.
So I can say it was a year ago.
Not that, but I just let them know.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we just want to make sure we understand, though, based on when you're born, during the year, a certain segment of you have a better chance at drawing those tags.
Yeah,
because
of
one number.
Yeah. Because you may never hit that max. But like I said, any date you put out there, it's always going to affect someone.
Right.
Unless
you didn't have points.
Yep.
Then it wouldn't affect anybody.
No, you can still have points and it would be fine. But the issue comes in when you give out 50% of the tags to only a certain segment that has enough points.
Right, but her feedback was no matter what date you put on that, it affects somebody that way.
I'm sure it would, but we educate 100% of the youth. We don't educate 60% of them.
No.
Yeah, I know. I'm just making that point.
Let me just make one last statement. That youth definition. We've actually even got feds to agree with our youth definition of the July 31st as considered for youth, for like the youth walk-off months and stuff like that. So, to change that definition for attachment hunt would be hard. So just keep that in mind.
Well, and not to muddy the waters and drag us out, but this doesn't just affect management hunts, it affects all the hunts. It can affect all the hunts, all the game hunts. So, but I'm not asking them to change the youth definition. Just simply get rid of 50%, and then everybody's on the same plane and can build. So, thanks.
Thanks, Mike. Okay, that's all the comment cards I have. Any other comments? Okay, let's bring it back to the RAC. Is there
Justin, we've had an informational presentation on the archery once in a lifetime. We've got a division recommendation. Now we've got another recommendation. So just a couple of questions. With the recommendation that was put forward with SSW, I'm going to ask you to do your crystal ball. How many tags do you get?
Yeah. So those will be set in the spring, and I really don't know on what that would look like. It wasn't our proposal, so we didn't put thought into how we would populate them. If the RACs pass that, that's certainly a number we have to bring back to it. But regardless of what that number is, I mean, one of the reasons that we didn't propose this ourselves, the why behind it, and again, it's a social issue, it's not a bad thing or a good thing, it's just a change. We didn't want to, right now, every once in a lifetime, the client was on an equal playing field for the draw. And with our proposal, that remains true. And if we have a unit that has 10 permits, and say we take one or two or three and put those into archery and make the other seven or so into the any weapon, those draws might be better for the archery hunters. And again, not a good thing or bad thing, it's just a reality. That's the tension you get when you start doing this. And so it really may help point creep in that segment of the pie, but it's doing it at the expense of the other hunters in the pie that would be the ones in a lifetime with any weapon. So I don't know how to answer that. We'd have to bring something.
With the possibility of a less success, would there be additional tax?
Yeah.
If you had 10, would you pump that to 12 and two of them more?
Potentially. I mean, there's always that potential, because if we tried this and we issued these once-in-a-lifetime archery permits and our success rate is much lower than the typical 95% that we have, certainly down the road, that would be an option. I couldn't project that now. We generally have to look backwards to know what that success rate would be forward. But
Justin, you couldn't do that day one. There would be some sort of period where those tags would have to be taken from the general rifle pool, if you will, or any weapon pool.
Yeah, and here's why. As we do our survey, say for Big One Sheep, and we look at it and say, okay, there's this many harvestable rams. Say you have six of them. You can't just add a tag and say, well, we're going to be sick. Because then it's what we're still going to have to manage to decide more through our plans. And if there's opportunity to get more permits out of our plans, we'll certainly explore that with or without this proposal. We want to maximize that if we can. But I don't know how you do it at the beginning without taking some of the opportunity from the others.
So, quick hypothetical, just Carl, along those lines. Some of the permit numbers are so low on some of these units.
Yeah.
And you'd have to have pretty low archery success to really be able to add tags, right?
Yeah, you look at the units the proposal is a smart one because they're picking units like the Zion or the Newfoundland Mountains units where we have 9 to 12 permits, that type of thing. So again, if we're two or three in that pot and only one is harvesting, well, those rams are still available on the landscape and more permits could be issued. Yeah.
I've got a quick question. I just don't understand, why are we getting rid of the 7-day extension if we're together, why they don't both go hand in hand? What's the purpose of that? If you're going to do the 7-day extension, why would that affect the other tags that are doing archery on anyway?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, to you as well. I don't know. I know you're not on this proposal. I was talking about the proposal from all the sportsman's group is that we don't agree with the extra 7 days on the once in a lifetime archery only after the hunt, but we do want to put these new permits in. Why can't we do both? That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, sure.
I have no problem with the 7 days.
I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that we're still on the same level playing pool on the once in a lifetime with the extra 7 days on archery. So for a guy who wants to not take a chance on archery only, but wants that same to have that same opportunity to hunt archery for about a week, just wondering.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could do that. I mean, this is just saying basically we didn't want to have those overlap again, just increase that competition or increase the number of people again in the archery. So we're just kind of saying, kind of sweep away with this, and then that's why we were saying we wanted to add a couple more tags and see how the bullet points. That we were actually looking at adding more tags, so it wasn't going to put more opportunity in there outside of it. So we weren't planning on originally taking tags. We were looking at these units that did have more sheep or more animals potentially that had pockets that weren't getting hit, that were more difficult to get to, that archers being a little more hardcore would usually spend the time to get into these areas where a lot of the rifle hunters don't really care to go into, where the archers are not quite as smart and go a little farther.
So, Ron, to further address that a little bit, I think you could easily do a compromise with a blended approach where, if this were passed, that eliminate the 7-day extension on these units and as an adult who wouldn't have an arch right now. I think that would make sense.
I agree with that. I think from a standpoint is if you want to keep that all archery only and have that opportunity to have an archery only unit, I agree with where you're coming from. But I think the other limited injury is that there's nothing wrong with that 7-day extension to get out in the field. I don't have a problem with that proposal.
Sure.
No, you have some comments.
I just have a question. I know we talked a lot about Point Creek and about affecting each other's draws, and we don't want to rock the boat and cause waves between the riding hunters and the archery hunters. If we had, say we take a unit that has a bunch of permits, say a goat unit, or, you know, there's a bunch of guys put in for that, we take a couple of those or even one of them and make it an archery tag. It's possible enough guys could go after that one tag. But in reality, that's going to be the worst draws, and we could actually be improving the draws for the almost 9 permits that are left. Is that not possible?
No, yeah, you're right. I mean, that potential is always there. Okay. So essentially what he's saying is if you had 10 permits, and you have one of them in an archery hunt, depending on the number of applicants that put in for that one, that permit with one hunt, you actually might make draws better for the other 9.
I mean,
we'd have to see what it looks like.
And it could well be a wash either way.
It could be. Yeah.
So I mean,
my take on the proposal when it comes to Point Creek is, because we got asked this last night, is this gonna help Point Creek? The answer we gave was it's not gonna hurt Point Creek, and I think if it did help Point Creek, it would help with minimally because we're talking about something.
The reason I ask that, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the opportunity to ask the question. The reason I ask that is this has been kicked around for the 20 years that I've been coming to these meetings. And we speculate about what might happen. And I just wonder if there might be some wisdom in trying it on a small scale and see, and then we'll know. If it turns into a dog meat sandwich, we don't have to keep eating it. We can throw it away, you know. But I think there might be some wisdom in trying it on a small scale and see instead of just speculating. Okay. Thank you.
The one comment I have is, in reality, we're already trying this. We have units that only have one permit. We have units that have 2 permits. And so in those areas, hunters are really only hunting 3.5 days during a 50-day season. You have that unit to yourself if you wanted to hunt a bow. That's how the difference is, as was brought up, and I think it's a good point, was if we force them to use archery only, they may really harvest a less desirable ram or one that they can get into, whereas the other way, they always have the ability to pick up that rifle if they so choose. And I think that's what the difference is.
And see, that's what I'm saying, is they may harvest a lesser ram, they may. How many guys might go with an archery only tag club? Let's see. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. John, thanks for your comments there. As you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, I did present that informational to the Wildlife Board back in September, and so I was a big part of receiving the feedback from that informational, and some of the feedback, fair amount of feedback, was why not create some new homes, create some new additional opportunities, and see if we can address Point Creek as John alluded to. As I look at this proposal, you know, if you start with a minimum number of permits, 1 or 2 in each hunt, I like the idea too personally, because that gives a bonus point, a bonus permit, right, which makes applying for that a little more desirable for people with points. But as John said, it can shift the applicants around, and it will definitely affect your odds. The original intent of that proposal going through as an informational was to provide an archery opportunity without affecting draws or creating amounts. But then the feedback that was received was, you know, what was created through the nonsense, let's see if we can affect some draws and see if we can't give some additional opportunities. So as I look at this proposal, I see new and additional opportunities. The division has recommended a number of new and additional opportunities, and I think that shows that the health of our wildlife in the state right now is really good, and that's awesome. And I applaud the division for all the new and additional opportunities that are being recommended. I see this again as a new and additional opportunity, and it hasn't been tried in Utah. It's been tried in other states. Colorado has archery and mountain goat and sheep hunts. And I think it's worth trying. I think that I've had a lot of feedback, both in this past couple of months and previous to this, and I think we've all heard it once in a lifetime, honestly. If you don't have max points, or if you're your max points, you know, it's a gamble as to whether or not you'll draw. And I think we've all been asked, why can't we address this? Why can't we make a change to try to get people through the system, more people through the system? I see this proposal as a very small step towards that, but it is a step that hasn't been taken in Utah before. And as John said, if it doesn't work, we can scrap it, but if it does work, potentially we could expand it. Maybe address some of those issues.
My question is, the good for archers is going to have good for muzzle loader.
Yes.
I think that's the door it opens. I mean, those are the questions that all sorts of be coming back to their app. You know, certain muzzle loader hunters aren't nearly as organized as the archer hunters in Utah, but could be going day. Right now, it's not the climate. I don't know what that would look like. Can I ask you a question, Ben?
Sure.
I don't know if they come this way, is that right?
Sure.
You were talking about the once-in-a-lifetime archery only hunts in Colorado, or sheep and mountain goats. Do you know what those success rates are? Have you looked at those?
Carl, you might. That's probably a better question for her. Carl's probably a better person to address that.
It just depends on the unit. Some of the units are more suited to it, Area 9, Area 12, not a lot of success. Some of the others are a little higher. It's really based on the unit.
90% of our any weapon is going to be quite a bit.
Oh, for archery?
Yeah, for archery.
Well, there's some that, I think it's unit 35, has gone empty on the archery tag for about 8 years until the last 2 years, and then the others are about 20%. Even the high archery units are 20%.
Okay. I'm just curious, because I was getting that question last night, what would the success rate be? I don't
know many that are in the 40s, so the high ones are 20-25% of archery units.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Any discussion?
Thank you. Yeah, I got one question. Justin, if we keep that plateau over the Powerwoods muzzleloader hunt, is that going to hurt anything?
Biologically?
Yeah.
No, we're hunting males and not quite the door issues.
With everything going on, it wouldn't hurt to keep it.
Yeah, but the one thing I'd say is if we kept it and we went and classified this year and that the doe ratio was down, we'd come with lesser permits, certainly. But our buck the doe ratio has been doing really well on stage, trending in the right direction. I'd answer by the saying this. We're just simply trying to manage the plan. And we said that that's what we do. That's the recommendation we came forward with. So if you guys feel otherwise, it's kind of shattered.
All right, just a quick comment. I'm going to make a motion. Having talked through this, I think John's got a point. We probably should try some of these things out. I think Ben called up a point, especially when you talk about success rates. So I'm thinking maybe a compromise is I'd like to make the motion to accept these hunts as proposed in the joint groups here, conservation groups, but also on the remaining ones, go ahead and keep the 1 week archery extension in the end. That's the motion that I would like to make.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
I guess if we split it out the rest of the plan and just voting on once a lifetime presentation right now. Okay.
Okay, so can we split the motion? As presented, and then.
Right, yes, yeah, that's fine.
So, okay. So which one?
No, second.
Okay, motion and a second to accept the plan as presented.
And add the joint proposal.
We'll make that, we'll cut that.
Hold on, I thought the motion was just concerning this proposal. Is the motion for the entire?
Yeah, the first motion that I made was to accept or to amend the proposal and add this proposal.
Right, you're not addressing the rest of the division's recommendations.
Correct. That's correct.
Right, concerning once a lifetime, but not everything else.
Well, and as part of my motion to also accept, even though it's part of the rest of the proposal, the one-week voting extension as proposed.
Okay.
And then you'll have the remaining stuff after that.
Okay.
That's what I thought.
Okay, so as I understand, the motion in a second is to accept the proposal or recommendation concerning the once in a lifetime archery.
Only guns.
Only guns. That includes to add new tags. Correct?
I think the division can figure that out. At this point, and for now, it's just to accept the proposals to add these hunts.
But the tag numbers, if these hunts are creative, we'll populate these hunts with tag numbers in the spring.
Yeah, they'll have to figure that out. For now, it's just to adopt them.
Okay. So the proposal is to, the motion is to accept the recommendation to add the once-in-a-lifetime archery hunts as proposed by SFW, UBA, Wilder Foundations, and our
Yeah, sure.
And also to extend the division's proposal on once-in-a-lifetime hunts 7 days for archery only.
Yeah, to accept that proposal.
To accept that portion of the proposal.
That's correct. That's right.
We okay with that? Okay. Okay. Well, then we'll call for a vote if there's no more discussion on that. Okay, all in favor?
Larry's in. Larry's in.
Okay. Won't you now?
I'm shedding that player. I feel the pressure. Man, Larry.
Okay, any discussion, any more motion on the remainder?
Yeah, I would make a motion that we keep the plateau boulder out of its muzzle.
Okay. You have a second on that? Dan? Second that? So we have any discussion on the motion?
Yeah. I just have one.
Even though I think this is not going to affect the herds or anything or affect anything, one of the big critiques people have of this board is that we build plans and then we don't follow the plans. So even though this is a one hunt, on this motion I'll have to vote against it because I think we have a plan for the hunters. We've cut tags. Now we're adding tags back in according to the plan. And at some point we may have to reduce those. And a lot of work's put into those plans and we're critiqued because we don't follow. And so even though I don't think this is significant, I'm going to have to vote against it.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair feedback. In fact, Justin, I know I should know this, but the recommendation to the boulder, get rid of that lake hunt, is that based solely on their plan or are there other
factors. Can you just talk through that for just a second?
Yeah, it's simply the letter of the law. That's kind of what we're going with it here. Over, we would have kept it. The fact that we fell into that 20 is a reason to propose doing away with it. And it's interesting because last time it came up again as well. You know, take a look at the one thing that the Mule Deer Plan did was ask us to look at trend in a lot of these things. And I'd have to go back and review, and I can do it really quickly as to whether trend was part of that or not. But as we looked at the trend over the last 3 years and saw that we increased miles in our does during that time frame, I was a lot more comfortable with the discussion that the RAC was having last night with this as well on keeping it. But with that said, it's below, and it's still our official proposal to deal with it.
Justin, so I asked you earlier about the three-year average in the last 3 years. We had this on this year, right?
Correct, yeah.
And so I didn't ask you 4 years back, which would have influenced the three-year average that would have made this recommendation for last year. Do you know what that was, or what our three-year was last year? When we
I can pull it up. But we were over 20, which is why we turned it on. And I think really what's dragging us down is in 2013, when that buck-to-doe ratio was at 16.4. And I know in 2012, it was quite a bit higher. It would have had to have been in order to keep that. To have that 3 year average be over 20, it would have had to have been.
Yeah, I'm trying to recall that portion of the plan. We had the 3 year average, but we also had the trend.
Yeah,
as part of that decision making process.
Can I take one of Mr. Lindros? Got to be on top of
it. Before you do, so that being the case, what's the possibility of this 3 years ago, 16.4 being an anomaly? It's a difficult year to count. That makes me question whether the accuracy of that. I hate to question the accuracy of the division numbers because I respect you guys and appreciate all your work, but that makes me wonder.
Certainly we were over 20 bucks per 100 doe in 2012, and then 16.4, and then we were up again to 19 point, whatever that was. And so, you know, out of the last 4 years, that year has been the outlier by quite a bit. So, with that said, you guys can discuss another things like delivery and see on the trend. Or you guys can make a decision by this way.
So Justin, so all these numbers have a plus and minus. So what would be the plus and minus range on those numbers?
There's variance around every buck-to-doe ratio, which is why we're trying to.
That's why I'm saying. So
it's hard to know.
Yeah, because I mean, if the trend is right and we're fitting, you know, we're fitting in that plus minus range, we may not be. I mean. Can't be that hard.
Sure. I don't have a good answer on what the variance is. We know there's variance. I don't know how much. Let me take a look.
Okay. Any other discussion? So we have a motion and a second. Council roll.
Does anybody know right off the tag you're talking about?
Sorry, what was the question?
Do we know how many tags we're talking about?
How many tags did we get last year?
That part of this boulder laid on the
thing. On my tags.
Just the hard questions.
What do you got, Joe?
I don't know if you guys see any other people from Justin. Okay. The motion, second on the table, is to continue the muzzleloader hunt, late muzzleloader hunt, on the plateau over the power woods here. As is. Okay, call for a vote on that. All in favor? Seven in favor. Opposed? Three opposed. Motion carries. Okay, I'm going to entertain a motion on, yes.
I think this would fall under, before we approve the rest, or address the rest, I do want to address the duty tag issue, and I do feel that is a situation that these units, you have to use, but will never accrue max points, because of when they were born during the year. So I would like to make a motion at this point to either, and is it limited to that, the Henry Mountains management hunt, or are there other hunts affected by it, by that issue?
See, the Poncegon management hunt, I mean, and that's, and there probably are other ones, but that
okay. Can I?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's just the management buck deer, which is
so the Poncegon.
The Henry's and Poncegon. Okay. You know, there is an option, you know, right now we have to give 30% to the youth, 30% to 65 and older, and 40% to the
other. Right.
Just take away that option and make it a straight representative hunt.
Well, I
was... Honestly, it's another spending, no one's...
Gotcha.
So there's that out there as well, but yeah, it's just for those two units.
Okay, great. So I don't know if we want to take away the youth, you know, the youth percentage there.
I would say that they've got another question for you. Go ahead. Before you sit down, sorry.
Yeah, no problem.
Would this issue affect the youth elk, the youth elk tags as well?
No, they don't have any points involved.
There's no points on the youth elk.
You put in.
It's just random.
Okay. You don't acute. You get a point if you don't drop.
Yeah, so I'd like to make a motion along the same lines as the elk. Youth elk tags, just to remove the points from the buck deer management tags.
Okay. Motion, and a second.
I have a concern with that. Sorry, Danny, I'm gonna make you come up here again.
If we
did that, I mean, essentially, what you're asking for is to go random draw rolls, right? That create an issue with that one in our draw process.
It would definitely be a program change. You know, I have to talk it over with them, see what the cost would be involved, the time, and see if they could put it in place before the draw. Actually occur without being aware of it, I don't know. But I can get some information before the board meeting and address it. You know, but if you are kind of thinking of removing it and just doing an old hunt, just always remember that you will be taking permits from the actual.
No, so sorry.
Just, you know what I
mean? Yeah, just to clarify my motion. Maybe I can add to it those that already have points would keep their points. But the motion is to continue the tag allocation as it is, keep those hunts intact. Just the youth who do not draw will no longer approve the bonus point. All youth will just be in for all of those tags, just like they do with the youth elk tags.
So you're suggesting no points at all, no points are used. Random draw and no points are accrued.
For the youth tags, yes.
But that creates an issue because then their youth are then getting behind. They can roll over those points right now to the adult tags, right?
Yes, they can.
Yeah, so if you can't all of a sudden take those points right now, they're 4 years behind, yeah. Or 3 years behind on the general and the limited entry, not when they become an adult, so you have to be careful of that.
Okay, my clarification to the clarification would be this. You can still accumulate points, but there's just absolutely no 50% go to higher number of goals. Right?
Yes. Right. Yeah, okay.
That's all you need to do.
Yep.
So they still accumulate the points, but everybody who has points is in the draw gets done. Just the top bonus point people don't get 50% of the tax. Yep. Then you eliminate the whole issue. Everybody accumulates their points and keep going up through the system. But it doesn't allow for those poor guys that are born the wrong time of year to lose that extra point. They may still lose it as they can accumulate it up. At least they're still in the draw for the other 50% of the tax. Am I right on that, Mike? Thank you.
So, I agree that there's an issue here, and I'm sure I'd like to address it. I don't like this option for the simple reason that it changes how we draw one limited entry tag from all the rest of them.
We're only talking about the new portion.
I know. But what I think what we also need to consider is the draw process is going to have to cope with that. The DWR is going to have to pay for that cover change. It's bigger than just the concept.
That's fair. We got to find a way to fix it. It's not easy.
I just don't know that this is the right fix. And I'm not sure what the right fix is.
Can I make a recommendation? Maybe if you make it an actual item, and the division can look at and see what is the best possible way for this. Best way to handle the situation and look to see what would be the best option that would address all the issues. And then we can come to you guys with some more information.
The youth is our future. The last thing we want to do is discourage hunters that are born at the wrong time and wrong month to hunt. I guess that's my only point. So I think we need to take that into consideration when we're going to do that. I agree with you that maybe we need to put it out there and try to work our way through, but as always, remember that the youth is our future. And I hate to have a kid that was technically born at the wrong time, didn't have a chance to drop 50% of the tax all the time, get discouraged, and decided to want to do more. So, just food for thought.
Linda, is that something we can do in the time frame for this coming while? Or maybe are we talking next year?
It'd have to be next year.
That's what I
thought. Yeah, there's not that time.
I'm going to go ahead and stick with my motion, Richard.
Okay. We have a motion on the table to eliminate the 50% bonus pool for youth management deer tags on the Poncegon and the Hendrix, correct?
Using those points from the audience.
Right. Okay, second. Ron seconds the motion. Any discussion? Okay, well, we'll call a vote. All in favor? 3-4. All against? Six against. Against,
yeah. Okay,
7 against, 3-4, 7 against.
With that, Mr. Chairman, we ask the division to put that, or the wildlife, whichever is appropriate, to put that on as an action log item to bring that back, bring the solution back to us next year.
Okay, so we have a motion for the division to make some recommendations on changing the youth management deer tag allocation, the bonus pool. We have the motion, the second. Call for a vote for a little discussion on that. All in favor? That's unanimous. Okay. Thank you.
Richard, I'd like to make a motion to accept the rest of the division's proposal as presented.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to approve the ballot of the division's recommendation and proposal. Any discussion? All in favor? Okay, vote is unanimous.
Mr. Chair, can I make one comment?
Go ahead.
So I probably should have done this earlier, but part of the recommendation is to approve that. The balance certainly does. Additional pounds in October. I just want to applaud the division for bringing those recommendations tonight. I feel like I can stay wide open. We really designed for that October outcome for the Wasatch Union, so I'm glad to see that implemented there. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, we missed your second on that last.
Wrong
second?
Yes.
I'd also like to thank Shannon for taking outside the box and going forth with and making all the efforts that he has made. He's done a great job in a difficult situation, and I applaud Justin and his crew for what they have accomplished.
Okay, let's move on. Preference point system amendments.
The reason for this change was to help remove
help reduce the number of remaining permits, remove potential of our computer system crashing, and ensure that over-the-counter sales days have less of an impact on our public and on our system. So I want to explain to you actually how our current Genesis Equipment Supply drawing is structured. First, here is the drawing order. The first thing that we do is our lifetime permit holders. They all give Genesis a deer tag if you're a lifetime permit. So we take those numbers straight off the quotas. After that, we evaluate all of our dedicated center applications. Then we evaluate all of our youth applications. I just want to remind everyone that we do give 20% of our quota to our youth in this round, and the youth that are unsuccessful in this round, their applications go back into the next round. And so the last thing that we evaluate is all of the remaining applications that haven't been looked at. So this graph shows you our current structure of our draw for general season. As you can see, we evaluate the applicants that have the highest the highest preference point. And then we evaluate all their kind of choices first. We look at their first, second, third, fourth, fifth choice first before we evaluate the next preference point group. So, for example, if I have 4 points and then say someone else has 3 points, my kind of choices will be evaluated first before that person's kind of choices are evaluated because they have 3 points. I've been applying the longest, so they look at all mine first. And also with our current draw structure, we do have, if you give your preference points, if you draw your second, third, fifth choice. So this is how the last 5 years have played out with our applicants. This graph shows you how many applicants drew the first choice versus our applicants that drew their second, third, fifth choice versus applicants that were unsuccessful. So as you can see, in 2012, we had about 66,000 applicants that were successful for their first choice. And about 26,000 were unsuccessful, and about 7,500, or 7%, were unsuccessful, that drew out on the second through fifth choice. And then this current year, in 2016, we had around 68,000 of our applicants draw out on their first choice. Around 44,000 were unsuccessful, and around 10,600, or 8%, drew out on their second through fifth choice. So at the request of the Wildlife Board, the division is presenting an option to change the way the general season deer applications are evaluated. This process, if approved, would allow the division to evaluate everyone's first choice first, beginning with the applications with the greatest number of preference points. Then the division would evaluate everyone's second choice, and so forth. Also, we're also giving the option of, if you draw a buck deer permit, regardless of your hunt choice, you lose your preference points. So with this option that we're showing you now, we actually did a mock drawing with this year's data for our general season applicants. This graph kind of shows you how what I just talked about, what it looks like, and how we ran our mock drawing. So as you can see, we took the applicants with the greatest number of preference points, and we evaluated their first choice first, and then we went to the next point group, evaluated just their first choice, and we went all the way down to the applicants that had 0 points. So once we evaluated everyone's first choice, we then went up to the applicant with the greatest number of preference points and evaluated their second choice and worked our way through. We did that for all the first through fifth choices. So this shows you the comparison between our mock drawing and our current drawing. Now this just represents our residents of Utah that did apply. As you can see, the green represents our current drawing and the black represents the mock drawing. So in the current drawing, around 63,000 drew their first choice and around 66,000 drew their first choice in the mock drawing. So it's about a 3% difference, about 3,000 tags were drawn out in the first choice. And then in the second choice, it's about 2,700 applicants that actually didn't draw their second choice. That went down. And the third through fifth choice stayed about the same. And of course, the unsuccessful stayed the same, and the ineligible state is in. And what the ineligible is actually applicants that apply for a blue-tin entry deer permit or a dedicated hunter, COR, and they drew out in those, and so they were unable to have a valid application for the general season hunt because there was no deer to have. So when I got these results, I wanted to see who that extra 3% was. It kind of piqued my interest to say how many, you know, what, where did they come from? And as you can see here, it was that 3% was the majority of them were applicants that had 0 points. So about 3,000 more people drew a deer tag that only had been to have any points. And a little bit more people drew in the long term that had 1 point. And applicants that had 2 up to 11 points stayed about the same. So that definitely was, you know, interesting to find out. And I also was kind of wondering what our main permits would be like my current job versus our block time. And there was only 6 permit difference. There were 6 permits more in the block time that were left over. Now that, just remember that is if everyone applies the same. So I do want to give you a scenario that could potentially happen with remaining permits, just because we don't know how hunters would apply. It's hard to speculate that. So if it goes through and is approved that you lose your points on your second through fifth choice, we could potentially have up to 7,886 remaining tags. And that's the match that we could have remaining. And how I got that number is just the applicants that drew their second through fifth choice, if they decided to not apply, those tags would be remaining. And also just the number of main permits that we already had that weren't even drawn. The one thing that the division is requesting that if the general season buck deer reference point is changed, we would like to use the same approach for all of our other general season point systems. So of course that does include our general season buck deer that we just talked about, but it also includes our natural straws, our crane draws, grouse, and our slaw drawings. Thank you.
A muzzleloader hunter from here in Utah County, like to hunt birds. So it may just be my lack of knowledge. My understanding when you put in for hunts on the website was if you picked a limited entry hunt, that counted as your first hunt choice. It didn't allow you to put one in for a first hunt. Everything was 2 through 5 at that point.
No, they're 2 different separate applications. There's the limited entry buck deer hunts that are actually bonus points. And then there's the general season, and that's where you can select up to 5. Limited entry is only 2 hunt choices that you can select.
Yeah, this says deal with general steeple.
No. So, I understand that when I've tried to apply in the past, it won't let me put in a first hunt choice if I pick the limited entry hunt and try to apply for that at the same time. So that's, looking at this, it seems really bad when, like, my father-in-law and my husband have been putting in for 10 years on a limited entry and never got it. And now, if they draw a general season tag, if this goes through, they drop all their points.
No, they're two different systems. So we have a bonus point system for all our limited entry once lifetime species. So for limited entry buck deer, and that's a whole different point category that you retain those points. You only lose them if you draw a limited entry deer tag. Preference points are just for the 29 units that we offer, the general season deer, where we offer multiple permits, not multiple, but many permits for those units. I'm not quite sure why I wouldn't let you apply. You can give me a call this February, and I can definitely help you out.
Awesome, thank you.
Oh, what was your name again?
Temperance Penrod.
Thank you. Any other questions from the public on this? Okay, so then, any comments? I have some cards, but they didn't want to come up. Just showing the support on this particular item. Any other comments? Okay, seeing none, bring it back to the board for your discussion. Matt,
does he have a comment? I'm going to make a motion that we accept the preference point system amendments as been presented to us tonight.
Yeah, and I'll second that discussion of the motion.
So, you know, over all the years, because of the way that it was being done in the past, I mean, quite frankly, we're more tied to the location than we are to the harvest of the animal. You know, animals have habit, and you know, so I think that that's why I never put in the second, third, fourth, fifth choices, because of the way that it's done in the past. So this is a huge thing.
Just discussion on that. I didn't get a lot of emails, but every email that I got indicated that they did not want to lose their preference points on second, third, fourth, and fifth choices. I know in Colorado you put in your first choice, and bonus points are only tied to the first choice, and it's just a random draw. Arizona does first two choices, then it's a random draw from that. First Wyoming does first choice, a random draw from that. And so I support the emails that I got that I don't want to lose my points on my fifth choice, so I'm just not going to put in on those. And so the motion is presented and seconded, I would oppose, and then I would make a subsequent motion that they're only tied to the first choice, it's a random draw from there.
We have a motion and a second on the table. We take care of that first. Any other discussion on this? I also received a lot of emails similar to what Carl said.
Yeah, I would just echo what Carl said. Both emails and discussions that I've had all agree that the loophole needs to be fixed, and I agree with that as well. The drawer needs to be changed, you know, where first choice is, all first choice applications are gone through first before moving on to second choice. But again, yeah, the comments that I've received have all been, let's fix that, but let's not take points on second through fifth choice.
Yeah. One quick question. Could they make the program so if you don't put in for a first choice, you cannot put in for a second through fifth?
You cannot. No, right now you can't. You have to select a first choice. So.
Okay, well, I received the same emails, and I feel the same way. I got to go with what the public has asked me to. I represent the sportsmen, and the sportsmen have said they don't want to lose their points.
Lindy, this may be another question, I just don't know. Could you put in, for your first choice, a preference point, and then a second choice as well?
No.
You can't do that. Okay.
Ben, Ken, for what it's worth, one of the gentlemen that emailed us went to the Northern Rack class and had to change the parts based on the division's proposal. Let me know that today, just in the plan.
Sorry, I just wanted to mention something. This whole thing you're talking about Colorado and Wyoming, well, they're unique in the fact that they only have one system for their points, right? Where Utah, we have bonus points and preference points. In Colorado, you can just keep your points after the first draw because you're still potentially drawing a higher class unit. Where in Utah, we're talking about the points in general units that really should be accumulating the points. We have that in limited entry bonus points, is that number, right? So that's where I think there's kind of a big division between us and the surrounding states, because we're not trying to accomplish getting a really good unit. We're still fighting over general units, which shouldn't really be accumulating 4 or 5 points across some unit, you know. So that's where I think we're kind of different. This is a good change for this loophole.
Thanks.
One more comment on that, and I'll be bold enough to say that your people are playing with the points of the ones who've been working the system. If they put different runs, they know they can't draw, but your second choice is the one they want, so they get another point, so they go in again. I know many people who have done that, and would continue to do it if we allow the system to stay the same. If we're going to look at true ethics, don't put it for a 19-year-old. I mean, I'll leave it at that.
Okay, so we have a motion, a second, on the table to accept the division's proposal as presented. Call for a vote on that. All in favor? Seven in favor. All against? Three against. The motion passes.
Thank you.
Good job, Wendy. I'm going to protest you, Wendy. I'm going to burn your truck.
Okay. Okay, we'll go to Deer Manager.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Northeastern Region Deer Manager Plan.
Thanks for your time. As most of you know, the division has a range trend that goes out and does a lot of habitat monitoring each year for us. We have a 5-year cycle set up for monitoring our deer winter ranges and habitats out there that are corresponding with that 5-year cycle. Each year they will read different units, each region essentially each year after 5 years of this cycle. Last year was the turn of the Northeast region to come and read those habitat monitoring sites. And then the year following, we did that region will update their deer management plans for each individual unit. Because this is not your region, I know there will not be lots of interest per se on what I'm going to present, so I'm going to move rather quickly. Try to do this as quick as in the papers as we can tonight. If you have individual units as I go through these, you have more interest in, please raise your hand and interact and we'll stop and discuss it further. But other than that, I'm going to go through these fairly quickly. Each unit will have a slide like this that shows the corresponding the dotted line that corresponds with the color. For example, the red dotted line is the population objective for the, this is for the 9-mile unit. That red line would be for the subunit of 11B, which is the 9-mile range creek unit, subunit of the 9-mile unit. That red dotted line is the objective. The red solid line there that shows the population estimates for that unit. And then the blue down below would be the population objective for 11A, which is the 9-mile panhandle unit. Just to give you a feel, and this will be pretty consistent through all the slides as we go through them. I'll try to just mention names so you can see what they, which each one is. So to summarize for the 9-mile population unit, it's there that includes the 9-mile and the anthro. On the 9-mile anthro, which is 11A, the population of current objectives at 2,500 here, currently at 1,700 here. Our recommendation is no change on the population objective there. At the top, as you can see, the range trend indicates stable to increasing trend on this unit. There's very little depredation concerns on this deer unit. So we're dropping in there towards the bottom of the unit objective for 11B, which is the range portion of that unit. The current objective is 6,000. The current estimates are about 5,100, and there's no change recommended to the population. Right now, this unit is just combined those two, is at 80% of the objective. The next unit we'll talk about is the book cliffs. This unit is separated into the north book cliffs, which is 10A and C that you can see there with 10,000 population objective. You can see the blue line there at about 5,200, just around 52% basically, where we wanted to be on this unit. And the red line is for the south book cliffs, 10B, which is the south book cliffs. The range conditions on book cliffs on the north unit are all stable or increasing trend on the north. The south book cliffs does have a few of the monitoring sites that have some concerns. There's two of them down there are in decreasing trend, and so we'll be specifically looking to do some habitat work in those areas to improve that. There are very few depredation concerns on the book cliffs. What is there to address quite simply with depredation permits. The only other real unique issue that we brought up on this unit's management plan is to keep in mind, consider predation on this unit as a major impact of deer herd out there. It is one of the units in the state that, compared to other units in the state, has a very high predator density compared to some of the units that are there. This unit is already managed under predator management and will continue to be as long as it reaches the thresholds, the percentage basically of objective that are in the statewide predator management plan. Just real quickly, looking at those population numbers, you can see we're recommending no changes for either of the subunits on the population objectives. The south slope, this is the south slope of the Uintas. There are two subunits that are here. The red represents south slope vernal, diamond bonanza, which is kind of the eastern half of the south slope of the Uintas. The blue represents the south slope Yellowstone, which is the western half. See the population trends there and the current estimates that are on the far right hand side. Both of these subunits currently have the same objective of 13,000 deer for each subunit. The range conditions on the south slope, again, are generally stable. There's a slightly declining trend in two sites that were impacted after 1993. We had a strange drought pattern that actually lost a lot of sagebrush. We actually had a large scale sagebrush die off out there, and then those sites were replaced with cheap grass and other annual grasses that are not as beneficial. And those two are targeted for within the plan, as discussed in the group. We're going to see some habitat improvement projects occur in those areas. So those are addressed in the plan. One thing that's interesting is as we do the statewide deer survival study that goes on, I think most of you are aware of the radio collaring projects we do each year. The body condition score on these deer are some of the highest. The last few years have been some of the highest in the state. So we do have deer in good shape. They are in relatively good condition. They're doing well. We do have depredation considerations on the south slope all the way across there. We address it with mitigation permits, extend the archery compass there, and mitigation plans to address individual sites there. The depredation for deer is nowhere near as burdensome on people as the depredation from elk that does occasionally occur on certain parts of the shooting too. So the deer density isn't that much of a problem. Here, the only increase we're proposing is on the east end, on the vernal diamond bonanza, where we're essentially at the current objective of 13,000 deer. The biologist there has recommended an increase of up to 15,000 deer for the total population. Move on. This one does have some interest maybe to you. Is your RAP, the Wasatch Mountains unit, is included in these plans being updated. The Wasatch Mountain West, which is here in this region, was done just a couple of years ago when they did the rhythm monitoring trend sites on this side. This year they regret just those on the east side of the current creek has been in proportions, and that's all that will be changing. Though there's nothing on the west that will be changing, and all this just simply represents the east portion.
blue lines near the top there represent the current creek subunit, Wasatch Mountains current creek. The objective of 15,000 is currently over that objective, as you can see. We've had a great last four winters in a row out there. They've been in great conditions from wintering deer. It's been very mild winters for these deer wear. And so we've seen some early increases over there. We also, the red represents the south of the Wasatch Mountains, the Bennett one, and you can see that population has come up to its objective too. So in summary here, the range conditions on the Wasatch Mountains, the east side, they have been stable, are increasing, doing quite well. There has been a large amount of habitat improvement work been done over on these, in the wintering areas, pushing it, Tabby Mountain, some of our division lands in particular, had some large habitat improvements that are really coming, starting to mature and become very beneficial to deer. There is some degradation that does occur on the current creek unit. The Bennett one has very little degradation. And those are all simply addressed through our formal permits and mitigation plans. So we do propose increasing the population objective up to 20,000. It's currently 17,000 for the current creek. The Bennett there at the bottom, increasing from 3,500 to 5,000 deer. The North Slope, which does include this North Slope Summit, which is in the northern region. This unit only has one objective. It's not split out by separate subunits. It's one pooled objective. And you can see how that population has been doing very well the last 4 years. And again, they've had really good mild winter conditions, doing well there. The range conditions on the North Slope indicates an increasing trend, stable increasing, but really increasing up there with decreased utilization. It's doing well. Depredation considerations are very minimum there. We do have one other unique condition or situation on that is addressed in the plan. And if you have called the town of Manila, which is, I don't know if you've been there, not the biggest town in Utah, they do have an urban deer problem. They've got several hundred deer that like to hang out getting around town. But they just like you've seen in your record, there's a lot of mixed opinions on how to handle that. Some folks love them, some folks hate them. What is included in the plan is that when the city council and the mayor, when they come to a decision on what they'd like us to do and ask for assistance, we'll assist them with addressing those through their policies. So, this population has been growing the last 4 years just on the graph. It's now 9,700 is the current estimate for the proposed increasing the objective to essentially where we are now at up to 10,000 here. So, do you have any questions?
I got a question for you. On one of the units, I forgot which one it is, it looked like you
you have a stable trend with indications that you could have a decreasing trend, but yet at the same time you increase the objective, and don't quite understand it. Can you explain that a little bit more? At minimum, we should at least stay with the current one instead of an increase, and we have a decreasing trend now.
Help me remember, as I showed you the graphs and came up to figure out which one you mean. Was it that one?
It was one before that.
Before this, we didn't change either of these.
One of the few ones that you had a decreasing trend in. You were showing a decreasing.
Here's our first year that we've been increasing. The booklets, maybe it's got the booklets would be the one that I can think of, but that does have a population decrease recently. That one is not, there's no change proposed. This is the one unit that is kind of struggling with it. It's about 52% of objectives. The others are doing much better than that. This one, the red line is the one that is the subunit on these two that is being increased, and it's been increasing.
You're having indicating a decreasing trend in habitat.
Oh, habitat. I'm sorry. That's what you said the other shoulder.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Good question. So that would be referring to the south slope over here, where we do have the two sites that have two of the range strand sites that are red across the unit front are at a decreasing trend, and that's because of that sagebrush die-off. That's residual. Well, not when we lost it. One of the native sage that was there was replaced with the cheap grass situation that's taken over those individual sites. This is also the area where those deer are doing so well body condition wise. We think that these areas that we're referring to, where we plan to target those areas with habitat improvements. Obviously, that we haven't got the habitat back improved yet to carry that for those areas. But yet the deer are finding another place around apparently to do quite well because they're in the best body condition in the state last year. So those sites haven't hurt us. And maybe that's just simply because we've had such a mild winters the last 4 years, try to keep that in mind and make sure we aren't dramatically increasing the objective here. It is going up by a couple thousand deer. But that's the deer so far seem to be in great shape the last several years. So we're hoping believing that we can go in and improve those to range strand sites that are dominated by annuals, hoping that if we can do that, improve those sites, and bring it up with the other sites that are increasing or at least stable.
So I don't know if this is just a DWR thing, but wherever your current estimates over your current objective, you guys always seem to increase your long-term objective. You never go back to that. You never go back to the original objective. It's just interesting with both elk and deer you guys are doing.
Sure. On deer, because really the reason the objectives have been being increased on these is on these units, the real reason, the limit that this creates for us on our plans is that we have to start issuing unified no tags or some type of a no harvest to reduce this population if we're over objective, if we don't make this change. And so these units here where the deer are seem to be doing quite well, it seems kind of counterintuitive that to limit, keep a population objective below that, then we'll have to start initiating deer harvest in those units. If we have winter range real problems and impacts from utilization of deer over browsing on that unit, then we wouldn't be increasing, recommending an increase. Obviously, like I said, the habitat where it's defined has been due to other factors, not over browsing by deer, not over utilization by deer.
But even on your unit, we have an urban deer issue, you're still increasing the objective.
On urban deer, you say?
Yeah.
Is that what you said? Absolutely. Yeah. What we find is, that's why I mentioned that, put that in the plan, is we find a target those deer. Yeah, those deer in Manila are not necessarily the same deer that out for the public's get to enjoy it. It's just like here, increasing a herd here in town is not benefiting as much on the mountain. In Manila, we have the ability to go in and remove some if they're interested to do that. We call both runs and things to target those. But again, the city limits, they have to decide if they're going to allow them to listen to city limits on the hill. But yes, the rest of that unit along the north slope that you're referring to in Manila, all of the habitat trends there are increasing. So we have the vegetation that's there to support. We feel comfortable increasing. The deer there now are doing very well.
The deer just are not in the right place.
They're not in the right place. Absolutely. Some of those are correct. Okay. So that's correct.
Anything else? Any questions from the public? Any comments? have a comment card because this is for you. Okay, we're going back to the right for your discussion and consideration.
I'll go ahead and make the motion to accept the new management plan as presented.
Okay. 10 seconds of the motion. Any discussion? Okay, I'll call for a vote. All in favor? Vote is unanimous. Okay. Looks like CWMU management plan is Colby Jones.
All right. Finally, we all came to hear. I got to get that thing. Okay, so we'll go through the 2017 City of Buckley Board recommendations. And so the way we do this is by looking at a couple different things. There's the new applications, renewal applications, and then change applications. So a change application could be a change in voucher, permit numbers or allocation, change in season dates, or change in acres greater than 34%. So this year we received 9 new applications. One of those was just a combination of 2 CWMUs, 8 brand new applications, 13 CWMUs submitted renewal applications, and then 9 CWMUs submitted changes that require active board approval for a total of 31 applications. Just a quick breakdown of what the state looks like. You can see the majority of the CWMUs are in the northern region, but we're up to about 132 CWMUs if what is recommended is approved. Something important here, you know, 97% of these are private land that we're getting some access to for the public and maintaining open space for wildlife. So there are a lot of benefits. It's about 2.3 million acres. Breakdown of the permits, just a statewide look. The Buck and Bull permits, about 3,000 vouchers go to private landowners where they can derive revenue, sell those, and again, encourage to manage for wildlife and increase wildlife populations. And 500 of those are access to our public sports. Just a quick reminder that that scenario is really flipped when we start looking at antlers, and that's where a lot of the opportunity is for the public, offering 1,200 permits and only 300 private applications. So let's look at these by region. In the northern region, we had Cedar Springs for new pronghorn, Mecum Ridge for new deer, Royal Ivory Outfitters, one a new deer and moose to mule, and Snowville Flat for new pronghorn. We had quite a few renewal applications in the northern region. One of the things that we've really been pushing on here to get it, one of the things that Larry brought up earlier, and that is manning to the objective. In these northern, in a lot of the northern regions, we're dealing with a lot of private land. We've done a really good job of making wildlife valuable to private landowners. And we've had a really hard time, in some cases, managing to those objectives. But we're working with the CWMUs, and we have several CWMUs that are either progressively increasing or increasing their analytics numbers, and we're working towards that on those. So hardscrabble is progressively increasing theirs, and a lot of the others are too. Mountain top is another in that same unit that's increasing its analytics movements and providing more opportunity for the public. Some of the change applications in the northern region, Deseret dropped 1,300 acres, so they dropped the CWMU. But we reduced permits accordingly. So, Double Cone, they have some public ground inside their CWMU, so they added some more trade acreage. So they made almost 3,000 more acres of private ground accessible to the public outside the CWMU. George Creek reduced Antlers Deer vouchers. Ingham Peak added Bull Moose. North Peaks, they changed their name from Twin Peaks to North Peaks. and increase the elk and decrease deer vouchers. Minimaw, so now we're going to the southeastern region, looking at the renewal applications there. Minimaw renewed, and they're requesting 10 additional deer vouchers, and we recommend to approve that. And Red Ranches renewed with no changes, recommend approval there as well. So change applications in the southeastern region. Hiawatha added some more acreage. They qualified for one more elk voucher. We recommend that. Indian Head moved their deer season back to the later season. And Schofield Canyons added requested two additional bull vouchers. And this will put them in line with what surrounding communities are getting in surrounding in the area for the acres. So bring them in line. This is the new CW in the southern region that we're talking about. This was Missouri Flat on the plot that most of us are familiar with. They combined with Black Point. It was purchased all by one owner. And so it's going to be the Pavon Ensign CWU. And they'll be for Deer Elk, Turkey, and Toronto. Recommend approval there. In the central region, Allen Ranch went inactive for a year as a farmer CWU. They reapplied in 2017. For 2017, we recommend approving them. Deer Creek, this CWU has struggled, and honestly, we do recommend approval here. However, they come before the advisory committee. They've had a really hard time providing a good experience for the public hunters. Over the last COR, they went 0-6 on harvest. And there were several issues where the public hunters were put last. It's not an elk CWU, and they had elk hunters in front of the guys. They did some stuff that was really unacceptable. It was almost treated as a private hunting club. We've worked with the operator. We sent them a letter, and we just let them know that this type of behavior is unacceptable, along with the CWU advisory committee. So we do recommend approval. However, if they don't meet the conditions, of providing an enjoyable hunt for the public, we'll probably recommend revoking that COR in the future. Rock House is a new deer CWU. We recommend approval there. And Bear Mountain requested 3 additional deer vouchers. For the northeastern region, we have a new Pronghorn CWU in Cotton Ridge. And that's all.
Thanks, Cole. Any questions from Ross on the proposal?
I suspect there may be similar same questions. Kobe, on that Deer Creek unit, with all those issues that they've had, why are you recommending approval?
You know, we've gone back and forth on this one, honestly. In fact, we were on the fence about recommending deny for the unit. And the one thing that we came back to is if we can work with somebody, we will try. And we felt like we spent some time in the field with the operator. We had some long rides and some discussions and just stressed the importance. And you know, we're gaining access to a place that would otherwise be locked up and closed. There's some public benefit there. So, you know, upon some discussion, upon a letter, we just felt like it's worth one more try. It's worth one more try to keep it open. And if it doesn't happen, all that does is reinforce the fact that, hey, it's probably not a good CW.
So with the interaction you had with the operator, do you feel like that particular operator is willing to make the change necessary to give the public kind of a willing and able to give the public kind of a
I hope so. One of my problems is really overly honest. I think so. But if he's not, it just helps strengthen our case. And so that's what we're working on.
How many permits are we talking about?
Before they had 2 public members, and now they requested a 9-1 split.
What was it?
9-1, so 10.
So 10 total.
One public member.
So 9, okay.
Yeah.
One.
My quick question. So I thought Jacobs Creek last year, I thought at the last one they decided not to do, was it renew their mule deer?
Yeah, they pulled out a deer last year at the last, was it last year or the year before?
I think it was last year.
They decided to drop deer, and then this year, this year they pulled out an elk, so they will only be a moose CWU.
Oh, okay, so they're not even deer. Okay.
I have just a quick comment. I don't know how many of you saw the KSL Adam Eagle show the other day, but he had a great show about this fallen officer's son that was able to go up on a CWU and have a hunt up there with his mom and sister. And that to me was very telling of how wonderful this program is. And hopefully that operator is commended for that, so I just wanted to make that go.
No, I think that's a really good point. They're able to do things that we can't. You know, they're able to do things that are able to provide special opportunities and stuff like that for wounded warriors, for kids that are having a tough time, have lost a parent, parents have fallen ill. And that's one of the things that and a lot of these guys sacrifice a lot of their vouchers. Give them away and buy the kids tag a lot of times. You know, so there are a lot of good things that come out of this program, and a lot of good operators out there as well. Good point.
Any other questions from the cars? Any questions from the public? Okay, seeing none, don't have any comment cards from the public, and so we'll just bring it back to the rack for your consideration.
I'd make a motion to accept the CWM management plan to implement members as proposal.
Okay. Second. Second from all. Okay. Any discussion? Okay. All for vote. All in favor of the presentation? It's unanimous. Okay, Colby, this is up again, huh?
J1, this will be the best.
Landowner Association for Minnows.
Okay. I bet you I can finish this before you guys got off the stage.
That's good.
All right, so right now there are 12 landowner associations across the state that are approved for 2017. We changed this to a 3-year COR 2 years ago. And they're requesting no changes, so they'll just move forward. There's 1 new landowner association and 4 LOAs that are requesting change and 1 correction. So for a total of 17 landowner associations, and that equates to 126 buck deer vouchers, 70 elk vouchers, and 9 buck pronghorn vouchers. Okay. So Diamond Mountain is requesting an increase of 4 vouchers from 44 to 48, and that's because of an increase of public permits on the unit. Old Creek added more acreage to the LOA there, and so they went from 6 to 7. Pavon Mountain also added more acreage, so from 5 on elk to 6 bulls. Pilot Mountain, we changed the age objective on that unit to increase permits, and when we did that, they qualify now for 2 permits every 3 years instead of 1 permit every 3 years. And then in the book lifts, there was a discrepancy there. Apparently, it was recommended as 2 buck pronghorn, it should have been recommended as 3. They qualified for 3, so we're changing that.
The new LOA, Henry Mountains at the Landowners Association, is participating again, and they qualify for one buck deer every 3 years, and that's what we're recommending as well. Thanks.
Chairs.
Oh yeah. You need some help putting the chairs up. Anyone?